This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White. He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. Poy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there. Welcome to a new week. Welcome to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones. We're live in our One Buffalo studio in Orchard Park. For the next 3 hours. Do it again.
That was terrible. Boom.
Yeah,
there you go.
Here for 3 hours to talk some Bills football, some NFL football with you. And the phone lines are open. 803-0550. Outside Buffalo, toll free at 1-888-550-2550. That's why I write it down, Donald. So I don't have little – that's why I write the phone numbers down.
We just got to get it laminated.
Yeah, I'll get that set. Yeah, don't worry. In a couple of weeks,
okay,
we'll be all set. Welcome to the show. What's going on? Well, most of the NFL is down in Orlando, Florida, the owners' meetings, and there's stuff coming out of there. But minutes ago, this is how organic the show is. Donald saw something on Twitter, I think, and I saw this earlier, about a report about Odell Beckham Jr. We'll talk about Odell Beckham Jr. a lot today. And a link to the Cleveland Browns. I read a column from Mary Kay Cabot, the fine reporter for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, who had a list today of 12 reasons why the Browns should make a deal for Odell Beckham Jr. Mm-hmm. And I read it and went through it and thought, no. But you have tell me what you read that got us going here. We were just talking right before we went on the air.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah he actually tweeted this out. And the question that he posed for everyone was, if you were Cleveland GM John Dorsey, would you give up fourth overall pick? We all know that they have the first and the fourth pick. So would you give up the fourth overall and the 33rd pick for Odell Beckham? Now, I don't know.
So the fourth overall and the first pick in the second round?
Correct.
For the Giants, for Odell
Beckham? For Odell Beckham. And you pair Odell Beckham with Jarvis Landry and Josh Gordon. Whew, that's a lot of
– yeah.
That is a lot of personality at the wide receiver position right there. But
– find somebody to throw it to him, yes.
Yeah, and you find somebody with the first overall pick to throw it to him. You have your running back in Carlos Hyde. I mean, you have some weapons out there in Cleveland for sure, and you definitely sell some tickets. But I don't know if I would do it if I'm the GM, but I would say this. I hope they do it.
Why?
Because if they do it, then the Bills might not necessarily need to get up to number two. Maybe you can get to number four, because then the Giants would have number two and a number four overall pick, and the Bills would have to get up to number four maybe to get to the quarterback that they want.
Yeah, let's leave the Bills aside for a second. Mm-hmm. If you're the Cleveland Browns and you want to get better and you're desperate and you didn't win a game last year, would you really want to deal with Odell Beckham Jr. at this point? And the reason why this is an issue is because a couple of things that have gone on over the weekend, the last few days. Odell Beckham Jr. is not going to Ian Rappaport said today that Odell Beckham Jr. will not play anywhere, Giants or anywhere else, without a new long-term deal. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He wants it renegotiated.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
John Mara, the Giants co-owner, speaking at the owners' meetings, he said a couple of interesting things. One of them was, I'm tired of answering questions about Odell's behavior and what the latest incident is. I think he knows what we expect of him, and now it's up to him. And he said there's a possibility that the Giants will let Beckham play on the final year of his rookie contract, so he did not guarantee a new contract for OBJ. And then he also indicated that he said, we're certainly not shopping him in a trade, but when you're coming off a season where you're 3-13, I wouldn't say that anyone is untouchable. So the owner says, tired of talking about his behavior. I don't blame him. The owner says, no one is untouchable. We could trade him. And the owner says, yeah, he could play in this final year. We might demand that he play this final year without a new contract. So it seems like both sides are sort of hardening their positions. The point is, we talked – who do we have on? Jordan Renan last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggested to him – you were here on the discussion about, is something going to happen with Odell Beckham before the draft? I mean, could you see them trading him? He kind of dismissed that. I think they're closer to a trade with Odell Beckham Jr., the Giants are now, than they were maybe a week ago at this time. You agree?
I think the owner is growing – and he's increasingly growing impatient with Odell Beckham.
Yes.
And I think because you keep having these small incidents, we all know the things that he's done on the field, you know, acting like he's a dog and peeing and all of that stuff.
That was nice.
And that was enough for an owner to say, look, all right, I'm done with this stuff. But then when you start having small incidents off the field, it does get to a point where you're like, I can't deal with this guy anymore. All right. And he wants a long-term contract. Do I really want to invest that type of money into this guy and give him a long-term contract and have him here? And once he gets that type of money, he's set. We always talk about when players get paid, they go into cruise control. You can start to see different things off the field, all of that stuff, because they've gotten their money. That's what they've been working for a long time. Once he gets his money.
Now what?
If I'm John Merritt, once he gets his money, I mean, what is he going to do then?
Yeah.
He's paid now, so he doesn't care.
And let's take it to the step that you point out about a Cleveland trade. Why would Cleveland want to buy into that? Odell Beckham, great player.
You are right.
What are they going to do with the behavior? Why would they want, you know, they're starting to build their team. I'm sure they want to build it the right way. They want to have players they can count on, rely on being there. Why would they want anything to do with Odell Beckham? I think he's almost made himself untradeable. Where's he going to go that he would kind of straighten up and fly right?
I think he needs to be in a small market. I think you're right. Every owner out there is going to give pause for the things that he's done on and off the field, his behavior. Now, you're going to look at the talent and say, man, this dude is good.
Yeah.
And so that's what's really going to make you question yourself and double guess yourself, because you're like, oh, I mean, I really, really like the way this guy plays. He can improve our team right away. We might not need to draft one of these receivers. This guy can improve our team right away. If you're the Cleveland Browns, you got to look at it like, okay, we just brought in Jarvis Landry. And Jarvis Landry has a personality of his own.
Yeah.
Now, he's never been one to be in trouble off the field that much, but he talks a lot.
Yes.
On the field. And so that's one thing you have to deal with. You still have Josh Gordon in the fold, and we all know his transgressions and things that he's been through. And now, do we want to bring in Odell Beckham and have all three of those guys together in one room together?
And a rookie quarterback throwing on the ball.
Right. And the rookie quarterback, because you
or
know.
Tyrod.
Or Tyrod. And you know, when those guys get on the field, they all want the ball. And they will make it known, especially if they're not winning games. I want the ball. Throw me the ball. If it's Tyrod, if it's a rookie, it's even worse, because a rookie doesn't really know how to deal with that
right.
stuff yet in this league. And you're talking about personality superstar type of guys that want the ball. They want to shine. And a rookie, that might really hurt a rookie, because he's like, I don't even know how to command this huddle. I mean, think about it. All three of those guys in a huddle with a rookie quarterback, that quarterback's not even commanding that huddle. Those guys are commanding the huddle. So it's
right.
I don't know if the Cleveland Browns would do something like that, because it is a lot that you have to deal with, a lot that you have to take into consideration. The talent does speak for itself. There will be a team out there that will trade for Odell Beckham if the Giants are really shopping him.
I think he is supremely talented, and I think he's a pain in the neck. And I wouldn't want him on my team, as talented as he is. The latest incident, the picture with the pizza and the brown cigarette and white lines, whether or not that's real drugs or not, just the image of that, for him to put that image out there, Donald, indicates to me that this is a guy you cannot trust to do the right thing. If he's bluffing and those aren't real drugs, real substances, why do you do that? If they are real substances, now you got a problem. Now you might wind up in the substance abuse program.
Yeah.
Why do you do that? I don't think anybody, the Cleveland Browns or the New York Giants, for whom he's performed and produced for a couple of years, can't trust him to do the right thing. I don't know why you would want him on your roster.
There's no reason, if you're Odell Beckham, to have something like that in a video and it not be real. You know, I don't think that's the case. That's just stupid. You're trying to get a contract, and so you make something fictitious
just to be
funny, like this.
To be a wise
yeah,
guy.
That's just that's not smart on his part.
No.
Now, you know, teams, like I said, they are going to double guess this thing. And if the Giants are really shopping him, do you have enough? I think this is what it comes down to for a coach and just in a locker room in general. Do you have enough leadership in the locker room to be able to keep Odell Beckham under control? I really think he needs to be in a small market, but whatever market he goes into, they need to have enough leadership in that locker room to make sure that he stays under control. And he needs to go somewhere where they have a quarterback in place that really commands the huddle. And I'm talking somewhere like, and I don't know if they even have the money, but somewhere like a Green Bay, you know, where Aaron Rodgers, that's his team. Odell, when you get here, this is my team. We do things this way. he needs to be somewhere like that, not somewhere where there's a rookie quarterback, where there's a bunch of young players that are really still looking up to Odell Beckham and scared to say something to Odell Beckham. They need some true veteran leadership on a team wherever he's going
to
be.
All right, we didn't come here to talk about Odell for 3 hours. We'll probably talk about it again. But Donald just brought it up right when we were going on the air, and I thought, let's start there. Yeah. Got a good show for you, 3 hours coming up. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com will join us. Don Banks will join us from Florida from the NFL owners meetings where he is covering. He works for the Athletic website, athletic.com, covers NFL football, has some interesting thoughts on the new the proposal for a new rule on catches, what constitutes a catch in the NFL. He also covers the Patriots. We'll talk with Don about that. So that's what's coming up on the show today. Plenty of your talk as well. We'd love to hear from you. The phone line's open, 803-0550. Outside Buffalo toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Before we go much further, Donald Jones, you know, we talked about it Friday. I know you are an anti-Wolverite, but the Michigan Wolverines are in the Final Four. I think I told you I know when it was. It was 3 weeks ago when they won the Big Ten tournament. I said, Donald, they're a Final Four team. You laughed then, and here we are 3 weeks ago, and there they go. Final Four this coming weekend.
You're right.
They're good.
Right. I laughed. They're a good team. Now, I'll be honest, I didn't watch any of the games this weekend. but they are a very good team, and I think they have a shot to win this entire thing.
They sure do.
With Duke now being out of it, obviously Kansas is a really good team. Villanova's a good team. The Cinderella team in Loyola Chicago, you know, I've heard some things about them. I haven't seen them play yet this year. I hear they have a couple of good guards that really are smart. They know the game. And I am going to watch the Final Four.
Okay.
I will say that. Now, I'll say this as well. You know I'm a hater to a certain extent. And there were two teams in this thing that I really wanted to see lose. The first one, really because I'm here with you every day, was Michigan.
Well, I'm not overly confident or cocky.
I know, but it's just, you know, it's just a way for me to just throw some shade at you.
Okay. Because I don't come in here bragging about Michigan every day.
No, not every day. Just every other day.
I'm proud of him. I'm happy for him. I'm going this weekend.
I know you are.
I'm leaving Saturday morning. I'll be there Saturday night and Monday night for the final.
Which means that you won't be here Monday.
I don't think we have a show Monday, buddy.
We don't.
You better check. I don't think we do. Easter Monday.
I never know. I never know. But anyway, so what was I going to say? I forgot what
I don't
I was
know. Something
now.
Mean and nasty,
oh, so
no doubt.
Here was where I was going.
Two teams you were rooting
two
against.
Two teams. It was Michigan, because I'm here with you every day. And then it was Duke. And Duke is a team that I've never liked because I have a bunch of friends who are Duke fans. Now, they lost last night. So that kind of made my night a little bit better.
Really good game.
Night.
You should have watched it. Yeah, great
game. I was actually on the road, so I couldn't really see it. I was driving back up here from New Jersey. But Duke lost. And so as soon as I saw that they lost, I had to send my boys a message in a big group chat. And it was a bunch of emojis in there. And their response was, man, go ahead with that, man.
Yeah.
And so now I'm waiting on Michigan.
I don't get it. You don't root for teams. You don't follow teams. You root against teams. Is that what you're
doing? I root against my friends' teams.
Okay.
And so you are in that category.
Okay.
And so I am rooting against your team because my team is not in it, and I don't think they're going to be in it anytime soon.
And who is your team again?
Do we have to talk about that?
Youngstown State?
No. Well, I went to Youngstown State. I don't count on them being in it anytime soon, but I grew up a UConn fan because I had family who went there and played basketball there.
Okay.
A new coach. I think they should have left and went to the ACC, but
probably, yeah.
Yeah, they should have left with everybody else because they were one of the better teams in the Big East, but they decided to stay, and I think that was a big mistake because now they're not going to get the same recruits.
Okay. So Donald rooting against Michigan, I'm rooting for him. I'm going down to San Antonio Saturday. Be there through. I'll be back on Wednesday. Can you handle it?
So, you know, here's the thing. If they do lose.
Yes. I'll be all right.
Or
with
even
that.
If they're losing, you know, because some people, they like to shut their phones off when team
I'll
is.
Be fine.
Is, and I know you'll be at the game and you might say, well, I was there. It was loud. I didn't really hear my phone.
I'm not
going
to respond to you
stuff.
If I don't like what you're saying. Is that what you're asking me?
You're going to block me? Like
no, I'm just.
I
will put
media.
You at the back of the line.
If at the like back of the
saying,
line.
If I don't like what you're saying.
All right.
He is a hater. He is a hater. There's no question about
That's
it.
That's right. Haters never prosper.
No. All right, we're not here to talk about the tournament, although you can if you want. The phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Here's what we're here to talk about. The draft now 4.5 weeks away, 4 weeks from this Thursday. What do the Bills have to do to get an A grade from you on the upcoming draft? What do the Bills have to do? There's no Twitter poll. You can respond on Twitter, but there's no, we didn't know how to quantify it for a Twitter poll. But what do the Bills have to do to get an A in this draft? Give us a call. Lines open, 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter, at John Murphy Show. What do the Bills need to do to get an A for this draft? I'll go first on this. They need to get a quarterback in the first or second round, hopefully the first. Hopefully hopefully they get either Darnold or, in my mind, Josh Allen, but I would settle for Josh Rosen. I would settle for Baker Mayfield as well. They need to get a quarterback early if it's going to be one of those four. They need to shore up wide receiving depth, and they need to get a good, fast linebacker. If they can do those three things, I give them an A. In order to move up, they're going to have to use more than just one of their 9 draft picks, so they might not have the kind of numbers of draft picks they would have normally. But quarterback, wide receiving depth, and a fast coverage linebacker, middle linebacker, I think, go sideline to sideline. You get those three things, I give them an A. What about you, Donald?
I think you need to get two things. You need to get, well, three things like you just said. You need a linebacker, yeah. You need your quarterback first. And for me, if you get your quarterback without trading away the entire draft, that in itself right there, you get at least a B+. Then if you can get your wide receiver, then you move in slightly closer to an A-. And then if you get a linebacker, then you're in an A territory for me. So it's simple.
It is simple.
Don't give away the entire draft to get the quarterback. Do what you got to. I mean, you know, make. Here's the thing. Make a deal, a good deal happen. You know, negotiate. Make it happen. And if they can make it happen that way and not give up the entire draft and they still get their guy at quarterback, boom, I'm happy with that. And then they can pick up a linebacker, a good linebacker, and a receiver. But is it – we can't say that this draft is an A, right? Like, when can you actually grade a draft? That's the question I have for you.
Well,
is it a year out?
Some people say 2 or 3 years.
2 or 3 years?
But I would think the day after the Monday after the draft, you can take a look at it and say, here's what they were looking to get, here's what they got. If these players work out, it's a good draft. I think I'm thinking in those terms here, not – 2 or 3 years after the draft. I'm thinking, what do they come out with? What is the haul after the draft? What's the draft, the 26th, 27th, 28th? So on April 29th, what is the haul? What is the package of draft picks they have look like, and does that fit their needs? I guess that's what I'm looking at here.
All right. I'll go with you on that. I say the day after the draft, that's kind of like a progress report. And in 2 or 3 years, that's a report card. It's like the end of a marking period, the end of a semester. Then you can really put out a report card on that draft was an A or a B or whatever the case may be. But the day after the draft, right now, this is what it seems like. It seems like you're moving in the right direction. You got these players. That's a progress report.
Yeah.
It's
kind of
like when I was in school, our coaches had to get progress reports on us for us to be able to play on Fridays.
Dramatic.
My progress report is always good enough for me to play in the game.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yes.
People sweating it out. Is he going to be all right to play Friday or not? It's Wednesday.
That's so bad. I'm glad my son's not listening.
803-0550, the number to call with your comments on that. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. What do the Bills need to do in the draft to get an A on their progress report right after the draft? Give us a call. Guy Costa tweets, in quarterback with 22, if they still have trade and get another one next year, don't blow the load all at once unless for a top quarterback.
Quarterback at 22?
Yeah.
Wow.
What about 12? What about moving up from 12?
I mean, even if you just stayed at 12, you're just going to skip over a quarterback at 12? I guess if you're staying at 12, there's no quarterbacks that you really feel comfortable with at 12, so you just wait until 22 and take Rudolph and Lamar Jackson, one of those guys.
Bitter Bills fan tweets, and get their franchise quarterback at 12, keep all their picks. Nick tweets, and quarterback, wide receiver, linebacker, and then linebacker, wide receiver. JC tweets, and draft one of the top 4 quarterbacks without giving up the 22nd pick or next year's first. Those are admirable goals. Are they realistic?
No.
Are they going to be able to move up from 12 to get one of the premier quarterbacks without losing the 22nd pick also? I don't see how.
No.
You?
I don't. I think you have to give up that 22nd pick. I do. You're going to give up the 22nd pick and you're going to move up from 12, and that's just it. And you might have to give up next year's first round pick too, because you even if you ask the number 10, the team that has the number 10 pick right now, even if you ask them to move back to 12, they are still technically moving out of the top 10. And so if you're asking a team in the top 5 or top 6 to move back to 12, they want something in return. That's just what it is. And so it's going to be a first rounder. It could possibly be next year's first rounder, or it could be some players from this year's team, players that you have on the roster right now. So for me, if you wanted to trade away a player from the roster instead of like a next year's first rounder or something like that, or even your 22nd pick, then, you know, that's something to talk about as well. But I think you're going to have to give up something to get up there.
Yeah, my grade, A, B, B plus, will depend on how much they have to give up to get up there.
Mm-hmm.
If it's somebody from this year's team, well, let's see who it is. I don't know who that might be. I mean, Cordy Glenn is gone. Tyrod Taylor is gone. There's nobody left on the current roster that I'd be eager to part with to move up. Is there?
Are you thinking? No.
I don't want to get rid of Jerry Hughes. I don't want to ship him off.
I don't think there's anybody on the roster that you're eager to part ways with. I think that I just think that they always think about it from a business.
Yeah,
know?
I know.
And
I don't want to give up next year's picks either, because I like draft picks. I like the value of draft picks, and I know this Bills group does as well. So I hope they don't have to dip into next year's first or second rounder. I would hope that's not the case. And that's the difference between an A and like a B, depending on who the quarterback is they get. For me, anyway, let us know what you think. Lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
So do you think it's possible to get an A in this year's draft?
It'll be hard to get an A.
Yeah.
It'll be hard to get an A. It'll be hard to solve those problems, to get one of those top four quarterbacks, to get help at wide receiver and help at linebacker. It'll be difficult to do that. I want to see him try, and that's the difference between an A and a B in my book. Let us know what you think. A couple of people responding on Twitter at 803-0550 is the number to call on the telephone line, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Where are these tweets? I had a good one. M tweets in, if they think one of these quarterbacks is worth what they'd have to spend in order to trade up and get him, Rosen or Darnold, then do that. If not, draft wide receiver or linebacker at 12, then wide receiver or defensive tackle at 22. Trade picks 56, 65, and 166 to Philly for Foles, and run that offense.
Wow.
No middling it. Well, that is ambitious. I don't know if that's realistic. I don't want to go two rounds without getting a quarterback, Donald. I don't want them to go two rounds without getting a quarterback.
I don't think, and I could be totally wrong on this, and they could view Nick Foles as being a franchise quarterback for however long. I just don't see him getting in that market. I don't. I think they want to build the team through the draft.
Yeah.
They continuously say it, and we all know you need to have a good quarterback on your team. And I think if they want to get a franchise quarterback, it will be through the draft before they go and try to trade for a Nick Foles, especially trading away two or three picks for Nick Foles, because you're giving up a lot for a guy. Yes, you've seen him play in this league. You've seen good and bad out of Nick Foles. But how long and how consistent can he be? And I think they feel like they'd rather, and a lot of teams feel like this, they'd rather develop a young quarterback into what they want that young quarterback to be. And if they feel like he has the tools to work with, they'd rather draft that kid and do what they have to draft that kid and develop that kid into a franchise quarterback for 10, 15 years. Nick Foles, how long is he going to give you? That's the biggest question. How long is he going to give you?
Here's a tweet from Jeff when we put out the question, what do the Bills have to do to get an A for this draft? Jeff tweets in, don't do something that will make me puke, like not drafting a quarterback. Mel Kiper Jr. gave the Bills a B-plus for last year's draft, which is pretty fair, I think, all the contributions from all the rookies. What kind of a draft do they need this year to get an A? Give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here's Gary on a cell. Gary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Great. Thanks, Gary.
I want to talk about Odell, if that's all right.
Yeah, all right. Sure. Go ahead.
Guys, I would never give him that kind of money. I mean, I'm from Louisiana. I'm a big LSU fan, where he's from. And I love him, you know, when he was LSU. But what he's become since he's been a pro, it's embarrassing. But why would you want to give somebody that's probably going to be suspended, probably this for this incident, maybe for more incidents? He seems to show no maturity and not growing at all with these type of things he's doing. Every time he says, oh, I'm going to do right, he just keeps doing stupid stuff. Why would you give him that kind of money? Plus the money he wants. He wants like $20 million plus.
Yeah.
No way would I give a receiver that kind of money.
You know,
like him.
That's the point, Gary, and that's why I agree with you. You can't, if you're the Giants even or somebody that might trade for him, you can't trust him that he'll be around to help you. He might wind up suspended. He might wind up doing something stupid. I would stay away from him too if I were a team in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't. And that's the issue now with him saying, "Well, I'm not going to touch the field until I get a contract." Well, dude, I mean, you don't necessarily. You're coming off of a season where you were injured, and then the last memories that we really have of you. I mean, when you think about Odell Beckham, yeah, the big catches and all of that stuff. Is he a great player? Yes. The talent, you could say his talent, he could command that type of money. But when you look at all of the rest of the stuff and him, you know, with the soccer net or the kicking net and then stuff off the field and acting like a dog and all of that stuff, is like you're doing way too much now. And I understand you're trying to market yourself and you're doing a great job of making money off the field. But I can't justify giving you $19, $20 million a year, which is you're getting into quarterback money now, when you can't stay healthy. I mean, not even – well, you've been hurt, but you can't stay out of trouble on and off the field. I can't justify doing that. And so if you want to tell me, well, I'm not going to touch the field, I'm not playing until I get a contract, oh, and I want $20 million a year,
right?
I don't want anything to do with it.
By the way, that's not how it works either. You know, he has a contract that has
right.
one year to go.
Exactly.
That's not how it works. We talk about Odell. We can talk about the Bills. What do the Bills need to do in the draft in 4.5 weeks in order to get an A from you? Give us a call. Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Back for a few more phone calls and more discussion about this in just a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Tom and I just going over the schedule. I don't think we have a show next Monday, Easter Monday, my man. You didn't know that.
I didn't.
You better check with somebody higher than me. That's my understanding anyway. I won't be here. I'll be in San Antonio.
Yeah, you don't want to be here anyway.
I know I won't be here Monday. Hey, we're talking about the Bills. What do you think of that? What do the Bills need to do to get an A in a draft grade next year? They got a B-minus from Mel Kiper Jr. this past year for their draft. Here's a call from John in Lockport. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for taking my call again.
Sure.
I think I got a pretty good draft scenario that I think, you know, we do give up some picks, but we're not giving up everything this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should give up, we should trade up either with the Giants or the Cleveland at 4, and we should trade this year's 12th for one of their slots, give up also our other first-round pick, give up a second and one third round this year. Next year, give up 1 second and 1 third round. So that way, we'll still have one pick in every round this year.
Yeah.
Even though we'll lose a couple players next year in the draft, we'll have over $100 million in salary cap to spend. So we'll be able to make a couple big splash players in free agency. So I think that'd be a win-win. We'll still get, you know, six players this year in the draft, quarterback hopefully, and then next year be able to make some.
That's a decent proposal, John. I mean, anybody, you know, everybody can do that, right? Sit down with a look at the Bills' draft picks in the next 2 years. Who, you know, you got to find a partner to trade, and that's a point that Brandon Bean made pretty emphatically a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago now, when he talked to us and talked to the media. You need a trade partner. What you propose, I think I like the fact that it allows the Bills to have six picks this year. Mm-hmm. I don't like dipping into next year's draft because I love draft picks. I love the value that draft picks provide, but maybe it'll take that, Donald. Who knows, right?
See, I like dipping into next year's draft, but it depends on what picks in next year's draft. Mm-hmm. If you don't have to give up your first pick in next year's draft, and maybe you just have to give up a number two or something like that, I think I'm okay with that. When you have so many picks in this year's draft, I don't want to give all of those picks up. You know, I'd rather keep as many picks in this year's draft as you can and dip into a number two next year or a number three next year or something like that.
A couple of tweets from a gentleman named TC1117. For you and me, you guys are giving up on Nathan Peterman. Don't think the Bills are. Plus, AJ has skills. You are over-evaluating Big Four. Bills bypassed Big Three last draft for Nate. Bills going to give him a chance. Bills may not draft a quarterback in the first two rounds. They may not. If they do not, I will be disappointed. I think they have set themselves up going back to last year's draft to draft a quarterback early in this year's draft, though. And we're not overlooking Nathan Peterman at all. We know he's here. We know he's had a year in last year's offense anyway. There's a lot to like about Nathan Peterman.
I think they're going to draft a quarterback in the first round. Let's just say that. If they stay at 12 and take one, if they trade up, which I think they're trying to get up there to get one of those guys, or even if it's with the number 22 pick, I think they're going to take one in the first round this year and have three quarterbacks on your roster and let those guys battle it out once we get to training camp. I just think that's what's going to happen. I don't think they're giving up on Nathan Peterman, and I don't think they're sleeping on A.J. McCarron either.
Right.
Because one of those guys could end up the starter on day one. I've said it on the show before. I think each one of those guys will get a start once we get to the preseason games. I just still think that they're going to draft one and let it just be a competition this year, and the best man will win that position, and the best man will be the starter on day one, and hopefully he can keep that job moving forward. If that's A.J. McCarron and he's the starter day one and for the season, hopefully he plays well and you're developing whatever rookie it is that you draft this year, and you're also developing Nathan Peterman, and one of those guys in the future will be the franchise quarterback. But I do think that they're going to draft one and let all three of those guys battle it out.
Somebody, I can't remember who, forecast the quarterbacks going in the draft this way, in this order anyway, Donald. Darnold, number one. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have said that. Josh Allen, Wyoming, number two. Many people have said that. And then Baker Mayfield, number three. Now, if those three go before the Bills go at 12, and if they're looking at UCLA, Josh Rosen, looking at Louisville, Lamar Jackson, or looking at Mason Rudolph, Oklahoma State. I mean, those are the last three. What do they do at 12 if those three are gone? And there's a good chance those three could be gone by, 11 picks.
If
there could be four quarterbacks.
If you're looking at – if all of those quarterbacks are gone and you're still sitting at number 12, at that point you have to look linebacker, wide receiver. No particular order, but I just think – yeah, at 12.
And then wait and see who's there at 22 quarterback-wise.
Yeah.
Because Mason Rudolph or Lamar Jackson,
I think those
are
guys
likely to be there, right?
They're likely to be there at 22. Yeah,
not Rosen.
No. Rosen will be gone in the top 10.
Yeah.
He'll be gone. So whether the Bills are up there or not, he's going to be gone. All four of those guys are going to be gone because there are just too many teams that need quarterbacks that are up there in the top 10. And there are other teams that are trying to trade up into the top 10. So I think all of those guys will be gone. If you're still sitting there at 12 because you couldn't find a trade partner, then I think at that point you got to look at another position. And for me, it's wide receiver, linebacker, no order. Whoever's sitting there on the board and who's the best on the board at that time. And then at 22, you can look back at the quarterback position. And if you don't feel like at that position, Lamar Jackson, Mason Rudolph really makes sense at that position, then wait until you're in the second round. But that's why the draft is so interesting this year.
Yeah.
Because you could – have a scenario where the Bills just can't find a trade partner. They just can't find a partner. And so they're still sitting there. You get a run of quarterbacks. All of those guys are gone. And now at number 12, it doesn't make sense for us to take one of these guys here, Lamar Jackson and Mason Rudolph, because on our board, we have those guys as second rounders. It doesn't make sense at 22. We have those guys as second rounders. So we're not going to reach when we have other holes to fill. And we could just draft somebody in the second round that we're comfortable with.
And when you talk about unable to find a trade partner, that means the Bills unable to find a trade partner at the cost they're willing to pay.
Exactly.
And I'm thinking, and this is a question, I hope we get a chance to talk to Brandon Bean before the draft, because this is a question I would ask him. Is there a cost? You don't need to tell me the cost, Brandon, but is there a cost beyond which you will not go to move up?
Yeah.
Right?
I think it should be.
Yeah. By the time he gets to the draft, he'll have
one. Oh, yeah. I think it should be. I think it's the same way in free agency. There's a cost that we are not willing to go above for every position in free agency. It's the same for the draft. I would think so. If you're a smart GM, there's a cost that we are not willing to go, because you know other teams – if you're the Giants, you're trying to play every team against each other and run that cost up. I mean, that's just business. You're trying to run the cost up. So you have to have a plan in place of, we're not getting outside of this. If we got to give up more than this, then, all right, you go ahead and you guys can have it. And we'll figure something else out. That's why, for me, it's like you need to have a bunch of players that you feel comfortable with in the top six. Sitting there at 12, at 22, in the second round, you need to have quarterbacks that, all right, we feel comfortable taking this guy in the second round too.
803-0550, toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Our question of the day, what do the Bills have to do to get an A in a grade for the draft this year? People aren't answering our question, Donald. They're telling us about the quarterbacks they like.
Yeah, that's all.
It always goes that way, right? It does. Here is Pete in Springville. Hello, Pete. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for taking my call.
Sure.
I would just want to know your opinion on Mason Rudolph, Oklahoma State, at number 12. Number one, would he be there? And number two, would he be worth, you know, that kind of a pick? And I'll listen to what you have to say.
Okay.
And by the way, Donald, go Michigan.
Oh.
So I'm talking about Pete.
To the haters.
That's right. To the haters. Here's the thing. For me, I don't think Mason Rudolph makes sense at number 12. Let's just say that. I've heard from way too many people when you watch him on film, the offense is so spread open. You don't see him make all of the checks all of the time. You know he has the size and all of that stuff, but you just hear from too many people that he does not make sense that high.
What about 22? He didn't ask this.
22.
Different story, right?
Yeah, it's a different story at 22.
Because he's probably a second rounder, but he may not last until the second round because of the way quarterbacks are overvalued.
Exactly. And you might have a team, and this is another thing that you could end up happening. You could have a team like the Patriots, like the Steelers, one of those teams, or even the Vikings back there, one of those teams that are like, look, we need to take a quarterback right now because we know at some point Ben Roethlisberger's out of here. We know at some point Tom Brady is out of here. We know if you're the Vikings, we only got Kirk Cousins under a three-year contract. And so we need to have somebody for the long term just in case. And so if you're the Bills sitting there at number 22, do we take one of these guys right now? Because the guy that we actually like might not even be there in the second round because you might have one of these teams take one for their succession plan.
Yeah. Mason Rudolph, I think, and the scouts I've talked to rank him as a second rounder. Nothing special about him, they say. And as Donald pointed out, playing in that offense, that college spread offense, you know, makes him a project. You cannot expect that he would come into the NFL and play or start right away. He's got a lot of development.
Exactly. And I think that's why you could have one of those teams back there to say, look, we can draft this kid. He can learn behind so-and-so. And in 2 or 3 years, he'll be ready to go. But I think he's a true project. Yeah, the size, the arm strength, all of that stuff, that's great. But I think he's a true project. And I think he might be more of a project than Lamar Jackson. Just because you know Lamar Jackson, at least he can come in, be dynamic, and possibly win you some games with his just ability. Now, he's a project because he still has to learn about being an NFL quarterback, but at least you know he can get out of the pocket and make some plays for you. Mason Rudolph does not have that ability. And so he's standing back there in the pocket, and he just has way too much to learn. At least with Lamar Jackson, you know he can make some plays for you.
Here's a call from Ron in Lackawanna. Ron, good afternoon. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Afternoon, guys. Donald, got a question for you. I don't know if you guys watch NFL Network at all, but Bucky Brooks has got Mayfield and Allen at number 12, and he's picking Buffalo to take Allen instead of Mayfield. Donald, who would you take at number 12? And then he's got Evans, the linebacker, from Alabama at number 22 coming to Buffalo. I like those two picks. And in the second round, another linebacker and a receiver I would go for. That would be my A. What do you think?
All right, so sitting there at number 12, he has Mayfield or Lamar Jackson going to the Bills is what he said, right? And who would I take?
No. It was Mayfield and Allen.
Josh Allen.
Oh, Josh Allen. Oh, I think I'd take I take Josh Allen because Josh Allen has the size and everything that you want. And I've been on the Baker Mayfield bandwagon really this entire process. But when you really look more into it and think about playing quarterback here in this weather up here in Buffalo, you do need somebody with some size, with the hand size, all of that stuff to be able to whip the ball and the arm strength to be able to whip that ball through the weather that you might get here. So I think I would take Josh Allen sitting there at 12.
Okay, I like that pick too. As far as the linebacker at number 22, Alabama, do you know much about Evans?
Yeah, Evans. We had Greg Cosell on, and we talked about all the linebackers, and you know Evans is a good that's a good one sitting there at number 22. Now he might not be there at 22, but if he's sitting there, I think that's something that you really have to look into, because I mean he. Some people have him as a number one linebacker. Some of them have him as a number two linebacker.
I like Smith better, don't you?
Smith is a beast.
Yeah.
Smith, I think, is the number one linebacker.
You like Van Der Esch, too, a lot, don't you?
Van Der Esch, I think, is good at 22.
Yeah.
I don't think that Edmonds or Smith will be there at number 22. I think Van Der Esch will be there at number 22, and I think he's a big physical linebacker that can go sideline to sideline. He's smart. He could be the player that they really like sitting there at number two to fill in for or replace Preston Brown.
Well, that's the big thing is replacing Preston Brown with a little bit more speed in there. And Chalk, the receiver from LSU, would be my first pick in the second round if he would still be there.
If he's still there, yeah. I mean, you talk about needing a guy who can get up the sideline. He was the one, the receiver that ran the fastest 40. Chalk could definitely be a big play receiver for you.
And he's got good size.
He's got good size for the receiver position. I think he's like 6'2", 6'3". And, yeah, he's – see, it's going to be hard to
– I appreciate
you. 6'2" and a half.
Yeah, 6'2" and a half. I don't know if he'll be there, though, in the second round. He might be gone by the second round. I think people really liked him coming out of the Senior Bowl. He started to really gain some traction coming out of the Senior Bowl. And then when he blazed his 40 at the Combine – I think that really put him on the map and moved him possibly up into the first round. And you just look at the track record and these receivers coming out of LSU, even though you're talking about guys like Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry with their things, their attitude and all of that stuff, I think people really start to like Chark throughout this entire
process.
Helped
himself at the combine.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Donald, why are receivers like that?
Well, I'm not sure what you're trying to get at here, Murph.
You know exactly. You just acknowledged it with the two LSU guys. What is it about that position that I never forget having a conversation with Drew Bledsoe about this, and this is 15 years ago when Drew was here. Mm-hmm. He Drew knew that he had to have good receivers, had to find a way to work with them, but he also knew that you have to coddle them sometimes. You have to baby them. You have to be totally aware of their attitude. Don't look at me like that. You had to be, when it came to dealing with receivers, you had to be aware of where their head was at. Did they feel like playing today? Did they feel like practicing today? Did they feel like somebody's, you know, giving them, not respecting their ability or something? What is that about that position that makes those guys like that?
I don't know.
Don't deny it. You weren't like that. I'm not going to deny it.
Look,
you weren't like
even
that. Were you like
best,
that? You were never
I
like
was
that.
Never like that.
I mean, you're probably more like that now than you were when you played.
Honestly, though, like I remember talking to some guys that had moved on from here, went on to other teams.
Uh-huh.
And when they went
now
to –
we got to think who that might be.
Well, Kamarikin.
Okay.
So when he left and went to Chicago, he told me how Brandon Marshall was. And I remember him telling me, like, yo, this dude would just walk off the field in the middle of practice, go to the locker room and be done. And nobody would say anything to him. And then when he left there, he went to New England, and there was nothing like that. But then he left there and went to Baltimore, and Steve Smith was in Baltimore. And he told me the same thing. This dude will walk off the field.
After he punches out a teammate, probably.
Right. He would go into practice saying, look, I'm going to start a fight today, so y'all better back me up. Or he'd get out there and just, I'm tired of this, and walk off the field. And coach, nobody would say anything to him. And for me, I never experienced anything like that here. Obviously, my boy Stevie was a big personality. He never did anything like that. But Ocho Cinco, I mean, there are receivers that are really like that. I'm not sure what it is about that position more than
any other
especially
position,
than any other position, yeah, in this game. I think it, especially nowadays, it has a lot to do with just you have a sense of entitlement. When you play receiver, you are used to scoring. You are used to getting all of that attention. And so it's like once you get here to the league, it just magnifies. And you get paid all of this money. You're getting all of the attention. You're getting all of the endorsements. And you feel like I'm the man.
Hmm.
And I think especially these younger kids coming in, because they've been entitled their entire lives, they feel like it's okay to do that stuff. And if I'm producing on the field, it's nothing that anybody's going to say. If I'm scoring touchdowns on Sundays, what you going to say to me?
This is why people love Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah, because he's not that like that. He's not like that.
And he's as talented as anybody.
Yes, he works hard as anybody else
in
this league. I've had a chance to train with him out there in Arizona. He runs the actual training sessions. I mean, people love him for that. You have other receivers that have been great, great, great receivers in this game that have horrible attitudes. I don't know what it is about the position. Even DBs, DBs work hard. You have some that don't want to work, but for the most part, those guys work.
Yeah.
Even the guys like Deion. Deion worked. Darrell Revis worked. I mean, these guys work at their craft. It's something about the receiver position. It's the sexiest position in
the
game.
There you go. I knew you'd get back to that. Hey, what do the Bills need to do in the draft to get an A this year? Give us a call. We got some open phone lines, 803-0550, toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and former Bills wide receiver Donald Jones here in studio until 3.
Not a diva, though.
Well, did you see this tweet? Jose Martinez tweets in, burn. Receivers are the biggest divas by far, Donald Jones.
They are.
He admits it, but it's true. We all know it.
I mean,
I don't know, and I don't know why that is.
I don't know why it is either, to be honest with you. I mean, receivers might be, let me think, of all sports, biggest divas. I don't know. There's some quarterbacks that are some divas.
Yeah, you're right, there are.
There's some quarterbacks that are divas. But receivers are up there in terms of just sports in general, the biggest divas in sports. Receivers, top five.
I agree. Top three.
Whoa.
Here is Mike in Tonawanda. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Sign Colin Kaepernick and Johnny Manziel, and that'll cure all our problems.
Yeah, you think so?
I know so. Is this better than what we got?
No, it's not. Neither one of them.
Mike, you know, sometimes we hang up on people.
I just did. Did you see the – I did. I think he's fooling, but it's all right. That's okay. Did you see the – somebody wrote or linked had the Buffalo Bills the best fit for Johnny Manziel in the NFL?
Is that a joke too?
That's what I said when I read it.
It was one of them onion.
It's ludicrous.
Onion?
No, it was somebody legitimately wrote that.
Wow.
Look, Manziel is not likely to play in the NFL again, right?
I don't think so.
I mean, he's going to play in the spring league, and when we see him there, it'll become apparent why he won't be back in the NFL.
Right.
I wouldn't think. No. Yeah, but after his throwing at the San Diego.
He should go up to Canada.
He should. But even they don't want him, right? He had a chance.
Oh, he did. Yeah, they didn't want him either.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Bob on the line with us. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air. Hello, Bob.
Hey, John. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure, Bob. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I just want to make a comment about the draft. I like to see them keep their draft choices. They don't have a lot of money, and they can pick up some good players. Use number 12 for the best player on the board, whether it be an offensive lineman, a defensive back, or whatever, and then maybe the second round get a quarterback. They don't have a lot of money. They can't afford to bring in free agents.
Right.
They should stock their team as best as possible.
What about getting a franchise quarterback, though, Bob? You're willing to walk away from that this year? I mean,
yeah.
A true franchise quarterback. You probably would not be available in the second round for you.
Yeah, you know, but you're still taking a chance with a franchise quarterback. You're not positive. Once you give some of these guys money, they're – I know it's hard to check inside their heart how they feel about football.
Right.
Once they get the money. I just think that they need to surround themselves with better players right now. Look at the Colts with Luck. I mean, they don't have players surrounding him, and they can't win.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Again, I get that. I understand why people feel that way, Donald. And, you know, as I've said a couple times last week, are some Bills fans afraid of taking a chance on a first-round franchise quarterback? Maybe that's the case. I don't get that sense from Bob. But your opportunities to get a franchise quarterback are not going to come up that often. They're within striking distance of a potential franchise quarterback here with the draft ammunition they have and with at least three or four potential franchise quarterbacks in this year's class. That might not be the case next year or the year after that.
Yeah.
So when you're this close to having a chance of doing it, I'd rather see you do it.
You got to try. At least. You got to try to get up there. Now, if you get outside what we've been talking about, those parameters of what you will need to get up or what you will need to give up to get up there, then, you know, you're going to take a second look at that thing. But I think you have to at least give it a try. You owe it to yourself. As a GM, we all know that in this sport, you need to have a franchise quarterback. And that could come from anywhere in the draft. Let's not get it twisted. You could find a guy in the seventh round that end up a Hall of Fame quarterback for you. Who knows? But your best chance at doing that is in the first round. And especially in this year's draft, going to be in the top 10 of the first round.
Yep.
And so you need to give it a shot and see what happens.
A break. When we return, Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, will join us. Chris has a post up about the last times, several times, the Bills have had two picks in the first round. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. We'll talk with Brownie about that when we come back. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Donald and I joining you live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where it's quiet as the Bills, most of the Bills officials are attending the NFL owners meetings. Cornerback Philip Gaines scheduled to make a visit to Buffalo later this week, according to NFL Network. Philip Gaines drafted by the Chiefs in the third round in 2014. He's appeared in 41 games, 16 starts with Kansas City in his career. Philip Gaines scheduled to make a visit to the Buffalo Bills later this week. A report out there that the Bills have released defensive end Ryan Davis, who played in all 16 games last season, 26 tackles, including three sacks. Ryan Davis reportedly released by the Buffalo Bills. The owner of the New York Giants, John Mara, does not rule out the possibility of trading away receiver Odell Beckham or withholding a contract extension in the wake of a viral social media video that was posted earlier this month. Mara said there's a possibility the Giants will let Beckham play in the final year of his rookie contract. Beckham, for his part, told reporters earlier this weekend he will not play in 2018 without a contract extension. The Jets have said that they have rescinded their offer to free agent defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh. Chad Christopher Johnson, the Jets CEO, said it just didn't seem to be in keeping with our long-term plan. The Cleveland Browns have agreed to a contract with another quarterback. They got a two-year deal with quarterback Drew Stanton to join the Browns quarterback room. NFL owners are at their meetings in Orlando, Florida. We'll have reports there later in the week, including updates from Sean McDermott and from Bills GM Brandon Bean, who will speak with the media later today. Sabres have announced that forward Casey Mittelstadt has agreed to terms on a three-year entry-level contract. He just finished his freshman season at the University of Minnesota and was on the Big Ten All-Freshman team. Mittelstadt selected by the Sabres in the first round of the 2017 NHL Draft. Sabres play in Toronto tonight. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Thanks very much for tuning in. Talking a lot about the draft, which is now 4.5 weeks away, a little more than a month away, and what it would take to get the Bills an A in the draft. They have two first-round picks, and a man who's looked into their history with two first-round picks joins us now in our One Buffalo studio. He is Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. Chris Brown in studio with us. Chris, how are you? It's been a couple of weeks since we've had you in here.
Yeah, doing all right.
Thanks for coming by.
Sure.
The Bills with two first-round picks this year. You have looked into the history. It's the ninth time in franchise history the Buffalo has had a pair of picks in round one of the NFL draft. Is that a lot over the 50-plus years of
you know, I haven't compared it to other teams, but I would say it's a fair amount.
Yeah.
Having two first-round picks, I'm sure there's other teams that have done that. Probably you can count on two hands, though. I would say it's about average over the, what,
50-plus years of history.
Yeah.
Two picks in the first round. When you have two picks in the first round, I think you get pumped up. I mean, everybody knows how people follow the draft. We're guilty of it too, right? Mm-hmm. You watch the first round. You worry about the first round. You think about the first round. But to have two in the first round makes it all the more exciting. People are pretty pumped this year. You discovered
well,
that.
Yeah. I mean, let's just think about where we were about a year ago when, you know, the Bills made the trade down, took Tre'Davious White, and everybody was already talking about what they had in their arsenal for the next year.
Yeah.
You know, they were already talking about the 2018 draft in May of 2017.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it certainly puts a charge in fans because they know there's not just one kick at the cat. They get two, you know, unless something happens and they make a move up the board or part with the assets to take one person instead of two.
I want to, before I start to interrupt Donald, before we get to that, I've made this point a couple of times on the air about, you know, parting with all those draft. The fact that they have two and they're so loaded with ammunition did start last year on draft day. When people say, well, why would they want to give up all this draft capital to move up and get a quarterback. I think they signaled us last year on draft day, Chris, that was their intention, right?
Yeah.
When they moved down and let the Chiefs move up and get Pat Mahomes, it was almost as if Sean McDermott at the time was saying, we're going after our quarterback in next year's draft. Now, how has that changed? I don't know.
I'd like to think that the scouting department, the guys that were in place that have come back, looked, and everybody that you heard from knew this year's draft had more quarterbacks in it. And so it was like, yeah, we'll go ahead and take a shot at next year's draft pool, quarterbacks in the pool of next year's draft. And so, you know, they traded back so that they can pick up the ammunition to be able to move up this year and get what they want.
What do you think, Chris? Is that a fair way to look at it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you look at the prospects that are in this year's class. It's certainly more than the last couple of years anyway. I don't know if anybody's ready to put it in the same class as the top three from the 04 class. I don't think there's too many people that believe, you know, the top three or four in the 2018 class match the top three in the 04 class. And I'm talking about Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, and Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, all three of those players were viewed back then as guys that could start for your teams for a long time. I don't think there were nearly the question marks that there are on who are perceived to be the top three quarterbacks, you know, in this year's class, which is probably Allen, Rosen, and Darnold. So everybody's got some pockmarks on them. And I think there's more question about their long-term viability in the league, primarily because Allen is a project. Rosen's got questions surrounding him, at least from what we hear from NFL talent evaluators about his leadership capabilities. And then with Darnold, you know, I think it's the turnover factor. So there are big questions on all three of those guys, and I think while it's certainly the most talent we've seen at the quarterback position in the draft pool probably in the last few years, you know, I don't know if they're ready to call it a generational-type class yet.
With Rosen, with respect to Rosen, are there more questions about his leadership quality at this point that you're hearing or the health issues?
I hear more about the leadership. I don't even hear about the health. And I think it's because you look at him in his pro day and he's dropping dimes everywhere and it's not an issue. I think the concussions probably, too, in close succession are somewhat of a concern. But, I mean, the guy's probably the sharpest quarterback in the draft in terms of processing what he sees out there. On-the-fly adjustments, pre-snap reads, reading the play as the thing unfolds. He's just aces in all of those categories. But, you know, concussions can impact the long-term career, you know, of a player at a position where guys get hit unless you have an A-plus offensive line. So, but, yeah, that's the stuff that keeps surfacing. Is he a true leader? Can he be a leader of men in the room? And I think it all stems back to, you know, some of these people that have the belief that he might rub some people the wrong way or – he thinks he's the smartest person in the room. Well, I think it's because he is, you know.
Hey, what do you want me to say? I'm smarter than y'all.
Aaron Rodgers talks this way. Aaron Rodgers kind of believes he's the smartest guy in the room, and he might not be the fuzziest teammate, but he gets it done on the field.
Yeah. Are you saying you should ignore that character?
I'm not saying you ignore it.
Because I don't think you do ignore it.
Because, Murph, look, none of us are getting the full personality profile of Josh Rosen.
No.
We're not in a position to do that.
Us or scouts?
Us.
NFL scouts?
Us. Yeah. No, us as media people.
Okay.
Fans in general. We don't know the full picture. We never will.
Scouts have looked into him, talked to him, been around him for more than a year. Some of those scouts know him.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And those are the people, some of those people are saying those things. And he might not be a fit for every team in the league. And, you know, that's fine. That's why you do that homework. I just think, more than anybody, he raises the level of the players around him on the field. This guy arguably has one other guy that's got a draftable grade on the offensive side of the ball for him. He had no defense, had to score 40 points a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the most part, got it done with limited resources around him.
How long have you been a Josh Rosen fan, Chris? Several
months. Probably since last October.
It's been a little while.
Since last October.
We've been talking about him. But here's the thing. I mean, some of the greatest athletes of all time in team sports have not necessarily been the best teammates.
Yeah.
Those guys want to win. They want to win. Now, look, you don't want the guy to come in here and truly act like he's the smartest in the room. Everybody else in here is stupid. But at the same time, it is what it is.
Yeah. I think the point is, and I'm not arguing for or against him. I'd be happy if the Bills wound up with Josh Rosen. The point is, you don't want a guy coming in and saying, oh, man, this is too hard. I want to quit and do something else. And I think that's a concern with Josh Rosen. Isn't it?
You kind of get the
how important is the game to
the Jay Cutler effect?
I don't, I'm playing with a bunch of people who aren't quite as smart as me. It's going to take us longer than I thought to get good. I don't know if I have this in my long-term future. Oof. How important is the game to him? That's, I think, the question.
I think it is important.
That's the question I think scouts are asking.
The guy got the tar knocked out of him, time and again, and he kept getting up and playing.
Yeah.
This guy took a lot of hits. He had no offensive line for 1 year when two of his starters were out. He's running for his life every week. I mean, if you don't care about the game, and your parents can afford college tuition, are you going to keep playing if you don't love it?
Okay.
I mean,
no, I hear
he could have quit a long time ago.
He didn't have
two concussions in a month.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have quit then if he didn't like football,
Yeah, I know. We both talked to talent evaluators who raised those questions about him. I don't think they're without some merit, some consideration.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're without merit. And people are going to evaluate his personality differently. What amazes me is how enamored people get with a guy that can throw a ball 80 yards down the field, and they don't knock that and a 56% completion percentage, but they question whether this guy truly loves the game when he's getting the tar knocked out of him, and they dismiss it. Not as good.
Now you got to put down Josh Allen. Look, what? People love Josh Allen because he's 6'5", and he looks the part. That's why scouts fall in love with that too.
That's great. You like that? That's fine.
Why don't you call
the
show?
We're kind of getting into
it. I don't like it.
I was here last week when we started talking about all of these
measurables. I almost brought some statistics in. I was going to bring some statistics in because there was something that was going to tell me it was going to come up. And I'll bring him in the next time.
About what?
I'm going to bring in his college statistics along with the college statistics of another college quarterback who could throw it 70 yards, run around a little bit, had a good physical frame.
Is that Jamarcus Russell? Will,
nope.
What are you going to do when Josh Allen is drafted ahead of Josh Rosen?
Oh, it's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm not going to deny that it's probably going to happen.
Why do you think that's going to happen?
Because of his size.
Because of his size, his physical measurables.
His athleticism.
I'm going to take the guy that completes 9 out of 10 passes instead of 6 out of 12.
Okay. What was the quote?
Because that guy's going to get me first down.
Daniel Jeremiah last week, Donald. Don't confuse completion percentage with accuracy.
With accuracy.
He made a really good point. Yeah. Go back and listen to our interview.
I didn't like Josh Allen's pro day either, for the record.
What didn't you like?
He's not even completing passes on air. He's trying to throw 70 yards down the field. Look, I can throw it 70 yards. It missed the guy four times in a row.
We brought Chris on the show to talk about his post. Looking back when the Bills had two first-round picks. Instead, Chris came on the show to advocate pretty strongly for Josh Rosen instead of Josh Allen.
Hey, you brought it up.
What have you heard us talk about these quarterbacks? Is that what you're responding to?
No,
here?
He was listening
to
us last week.
You're listening to us? Look, I'm
in the bunker writing and prepping for the draft.
All right, you wrote this in the bunker. A look back at drafts when the Bills had a pair of ones. It's up on our website, buffalobills.com. Two first-round draft picks. It's happened 8 times prior in Bills history, including 1973. How did they do in 73, Chris?
I'd say they did pretty good.
Yeah.
They got a Hall of Famer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Joe D, that'll work. The other pick wasn't that great. Paul Seymour, I mean, he played for a while. But anytime you get a Hall of Famer in the first round, I think that'll work.
1979, 6 years later, again, the Bills with two first-round picks. This was interesting because they get Jerry Butler, turned out to be a great player, right? He's a wall of famer with the franchise, a great productive wide receiver from Clemson. But they also got Tom Cousineau, who never played a snap for the Bills, but helped them get Jim Kelly. I don't know. How do you evaluate that?
Was Cousineau
a bad pick?
I mean, he never played a down for
never
the team, so you say, what did you get there? So I guess in 1979, not that thrilled about the pick. Because he ended up going up to the CFL and playing
for Montreal.
And it was interesting kind of going through the history. That agent, I think Slusher was his name, was Cousineau's agent. And the Bills had all kinds of problems with him and would have problems with him a couple of years later in the 76 draft. They drafted Tom Rude in the first round, and then they drafted Bob Nelson, his teammate at Nebraska, who was also a linebacker, and they wanted to fortify the defense, and they were holding out and all this stuff, and he was holding the Cousineau player rights against them, and it was just a mess with that guy for multiple years. So I think they made the best of a bad situation there. They really did with, you know, flipping him for the pick that eventually became Jim Kelly in 83.
Well, that takes us to the next time they had two first-rounders. Kelly, Hall of Famer, and the tight end, Tony Hunter from Notre Dame, who was, I think people, most people, Bills fans, good Bills fans know this. Hunter was drafted before Kelly, right?
Yeah, 12th, and then Kelly was 14th. And
that's crazy.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it is. But, I mean, I think if you think about Jim Kelly's college career, it was a little pockmarked, you know. It was a series of fits and starts, and it really wasn't until his senior year that he kind of showed the kind of moxie that he had as a quarterback. And I think a lot of talent evaluators in a draft class that included John Elway, Todd Blackledge, who had more prolific college careers than him, and – you know, you also had Dan Marino, mm-hmm. who had some issues also at Pitt, but they had come from what were more accomplished college programs. I mean, Miami was just getting on the map with Howard Schnellenberger down there, and Jim was obviously a part of that. He was a catalyst for that because they took off, you know, even more after Jim left. I think all those things worked against Jim, and I think that's a big reason why, you know, he ended up being the 14th pick. You know, and wasn't in that upper echelon with Blackledge, who was a top 10 pick, and then obviously Elway, you know, who had the whole mess between the Colts and the Broncos. But, yeah, I think that's a big reason why he went 14th. The interesting thing about Hunter is the Bills flipped him for another quarterback. They traded him to the Rams to get Vince Ferragamo. And I know Ferragamo wasn't any great shakes for the Bills at the quarterback position, but Hunter was done after 4 years in the league due to a leg injury that effectively ended his career.
I thought that's about Tony Hunter, and when I read your post, I thought about it again. I thought it last week when Eric Ebron was released. I don't know if I'd ever use a first-round pick on a tight end, unless his name is Winslow, and maybe not even
or Tony Gonzalez.
Or Tony Gonzalez. You know what I mean? It's hard
in
to...
this year, in today's football?
Yes. In 1983 Ooh. Football. Who?
Yeah, you're not – well, it's more of a blocker then.
Right.
You know, so.
Now, I mean, these tight ends now are dynamic. I mean, these guys are receivers.
Who?
Well, I mean, Zach Ertz was a second-round pick. What was Kelsey? Travis Kelsey a third-round pick?
I'm saying I don't know if I'd use a first-round pick. Gronkowski was a second-round pick.
Well, yeah.
Well,
the only reason he was
–
now, in fairness to this, the only reason Gronk was a second-round pick was because he had – I think one, maybe two back surgeries college.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an injury risk there and a longevity risk that they were worried about. So I think that played a role there. But, man, if you've got a dynamic pass-catching tight end, I think there's an argument to be made there.
I think now.
Nowhere in the first 32 picks, Murph?
Yeah, I think now.
Like, not even 25? You wouldn't take
I don't think so. There's so many times.
If you knew Travis Kelce would be what he is now – you wouldn't take him 25th overall in the
draft? All right, late first round, that's different.
I mean, not top 10, maybe.
I still know the tight ends are
when did Gonzalez go? Gonzalez was a first rounder.
He was a first rounder. I can't remember exactly when. But
and he played college basketball.
Right.
I just think playing basketball at Cal.
These guys are receivers now. I mean, you have some that can do both.
Tony Hunter,
especially if you have a guy that can do both. And he's dynamic as a pass-catching tight end, and it makes sense to take a chance. Like Tampa Bay took a guy, O.J. Howard, in the draft last year. And we'll see how he pans out. But he was a guy that you're like, this guy's a difference maker. And the way they use tight ends
was
now.
Was he a difference maker last year? Not really.
He was against the Bills. No. He had a big game against the Bills.
He wasn't. But I think you have across the league these teams using tight ends more, especially when you have teams now with these hybrid safety linebacker type of guys that are getting smaller. You need to have a tight end going against those guys because the tight end might have – a mismatch.
I think the value is unquestionably different now, you know, if you have the skill set that Donald's describing. And I think there are going to be players like that with first-round grades. Maybe not in this year's draft, but
– even a kid out of Penn State?
There will – yeah, Gesicki, I don't know if he's a first-round talent, but he's probably a second-round pick. He's probably early day two. And, yes, I know that falls under your criteria, Murph, but I think there will be guys that come down the pike here in the next – few years that are going to fit that description and be such a behemoth of a physical talent that they're not going to be ignored in round one.
Hey, Chris, we want to get back to these years when the Bills had two first-round picks. A couple of tweets I want to read to you, though, that deal with Chris Brown. Bob Z, user of GIFs, tweets in, I've never liked Chris Brown more than I do now during this interview. 100% my sentiments on Rosen and Allen. And then Dean Mandel, tell him, Chris, Allen overrated, Rosen is the pick. And one more, Chris Brown is killing it going after Josh Allen, going hard at Josh Allen. Chris Brown was killing it. We'll get back to – I know you were killing it, but – and I don't disagree. I just saying.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about my opinion. I'm telling you, and you know this, what scouts say.
I've heard it. And again, that's part of the profile that even the most ardent draft Nick or prognosticator may not be able to get the full breadth of. You know, what is their personality? Are they a true leader in the locker room at the most important position on the field? And – sure, I don't deny for a second that that would probably devalue the overall grade on a player like Josh Rosen, who I think is unquestionably the most pro-ready
arm.
Quarterback in terms mm-hmm. of
best
on-field
arm.
Talent.
Arm talent. On-field. Arm talent.
I'm just saying on the field, I think he's the best quarterback in terms of his skill set. Accuracy, hitting pass, you know, throwing receivers open, decision-making. You know, being able to take a hit and get back up, I think a lot of those guys can do that. But I think the whole package, I think Rosen's the most ready right now. You know what you're getting, and I think he just – his accuracy is special in comparison to the other four, in my opinion. I think the next closest guy to him in accuracy is Mayfield.
Mayfield. Right.
Let's leave Josh Allen out of this, and I do want to get back to your post in a second here. What about Darnold? Why does almost every draft analyst have Darnold ahead of Josh Rosen?
I think because of his age. I think the ceiling, I think they generally feel the ceiling's higher on Darnold. And I've never been a huge guy on ceiling. I mean, growing up a big baseball fan, and you hear about all these, and I know baseball's apples and oranges with football, but you used to hear all the time about the guys they draft in the major leagues, and I know it's a longer projection in baseball than football, but mm-hmm. man, I mean, people talk about ceiling all the time. You want to talk about personality profiles, you better nail the personality profile on somebody that you claim has a high ceiling. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't have the work ethic and the ethos as a football player, they're not going to meet whatever ceiling you think they have. So even more than a guy like Rosen and what he brings to the table now and knowing about his personality and what he can be, if you have got a 20-year-old quarterback like a Sam Darnold, dollars to donuts, you better know what his personality is to a T, because you're counting on that personality to get him to the ceiling that you're forecasting for him.
I think that's exactly it. I think NFL teams like his personality more than they like
that's
Josh
right.
Rosen's
and I think that's why he is rated higher, because he's Johnny All-American. I mean, he's a really good leader, one-on-one and all of that stuff. He's humble, you know, as they come at the quarterback position. I think there's going to be some teams out there who like a quarterback with moxie. That's why those people like Baker Mayfield. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to be turned off by Baker Mayfield because mm-hmm. he's too cocky. He's too over the top for some teams. Like, oh, I don't know if I want this, you know. And some people are like, oh, my God, give me more of that.
Right.
I want that on my team. I want a guy that is going to be pumping his fist after he makes a giant play. A guy who's not afraid to plant his flag at the middle of the field in Buckeye Stadium. There's teams out there that love that. You can't deny that. There's mm-hmm. there's coaches
sure.
out there that are jumping up on the table going, give me that guy. I don't mm-hmm. care if he's 6 feet tall. I want him tomorrow.
Right.
You know? So it's different strokes for different folks. It really is.
I mean, when you think about it, as a GM and you're drafting a guy, I'd like to believe that, yeah, the ceiling is big. You can see, oh, this guy has a high ceiling because he has the measurables. That's one thing. But if you're taking a quarterback that high, I mean – how long do you have as a GM to really develop this guy? If that quarterback doesn't take – if he takes 5-6 years, I might not even be here by the time this guy develops into a
– And here's the other reason why I'm not crazy on ceiling. Players now have as little development time as they have ever had with NFL coaching staffs based on the way the CBA is structured. You can't come here until middle of April. Mm-hmm. You can't look at a playbook until the end of April. And then you can't rep it on the field until May.
Right.
And for me, if I've got a guy that's got a high ceiling, yeah, he works hard, but the time with the coaches is as reduced as it's ever been, perhaps in NFL history, I'm concerned about him reaching that ceiling. Because my coaches, the way I want him coached, is limited in its scope just by virtue of the CBA rules. So that worries me. Give me the guy that's got the skill set that I can bank on that I know is there already and will show up on the field on Sunday instead of banking on a 20-year-old who's got 60 turnovers and may not get there.
You got a few more minutes? Can we take a break and get back? Yeah, I want to get through your first-round analysis.
You keep going off on tangents here, and you're getting me
you
all
started.
It
always comes back.
I got a vein popping out of my – kids are going to be making fun of the vein popping out of my head.
It always gets the quarterbacks, right, Donald? Tell them.
Yeah.
Calls, everything.
I like training camp Chris Brown. Like Anquan Boldin, Chris Brown.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I thought we were getting there.
It always goes back to quarterbacks, even with guests like Chris. We're going to come back with Chris in a moment. You're welcome to join us as well. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. The Bills' history with two first-round picks in the draft. We'll talk more about Chris with that. More about that with Chris when we return. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com in studio with us here today. Chris, believe it or not, we just ran to his office on the other side of the building to get these stats. Now, I'm going to ask you about that. First, I'm going to let you catch your breath because you did run. Second, we got to finish your article. We got to finish talking about your article.
Chris is in shape. He's not even
that was
breathing
good.
Hard.
That was very impressive, Chris.
4 minutes he got to the other
Four
side
minutes
of Orchard Park.
From the other, yeah, the other side of the building. Really, it's about as far away from here as you could be and still be in the building when you think about it, Chris.
Almost. Loading dock would probably be the only thing further.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris Brown has written a look back at drafts when the Bills had a pair of ones. It's a post that's up on BuffaloBills.com. It's very good. We talked about 83, Tony Hunter, Jim Kelly. 85, Bruce Smith, number one overall pick. And I hope people don't forget about Derek Burrows, Chris. He was on his way to being a really good corner, like maybe potentially a Pro Bowl corner in this league before his neck injury took him out of the game.
Right. And, I mean, everybody knows, you know, Bruce Smith, first pick in the draft, and people say, oh, wow, that's easy. And maybe it was. Maybe it was that apparent, you know, to the Bills front office. But, yeah, I mean, I thought Burrows was a nice pick out of Memphis, and he was kind of like a long corner before there was a long corner.
Yes.
You know, he was like a six-footer,
yep,
which was almost and almost unheard of, you know, at the cornerback position back then.
Good athlete.
Yeah, and, I mean, developed into a full-time starter, but, you know, he has that narrowing of the spinal column, which I guess they call spinal stenosis.
Stenosis, that's what it was.
Now, and, you know, they said he risked paralysis if he kept playing, so he had to hang it up after 5 years. So, I mean, it was a good rate of return when you think about it. It's just unfortunate, and unfortunately, you know, you look across the history of this. As I was going through the history of these draft classes and having two first round picks, I mean, he's not the only example of a career cut short. I mean, Tony Hunter, as I mentioned, has a career ending leg injury after four seasons. He's with the Rams by the time that happens, but there's a few examples through here where you see that careers just cut short by injury.
You mentioned how this is the ninth time the Bills have had two picks in the first round. For a while there, and I was covering the team, it seemed like they had two picks almost every year. 83, we talked about, 85, and 86, two picks in the first round.
And there were some instances where they had two picks in the second round also, like 76, I know they did, 79. They really loaded up due to some trades. The O.J. Simpson trade was one of them where they just brought a haul coming back the other way over the course of 2 or 3 years. And they just seemed to have a lot to work with. They just didn't always hit on them, unfortunately.
86 was okay. Ronnie Harmon was a pretty good running back. Will Wolford was a really good offensive lineman, two first-rounders.
Right. And I know that, you know, if you bring up Will Wolford and Plan B for your agency, you can still make Bill Polian's face red. you know, he was really mad that they lost him in Plan B free agency, you know, after he had been such a solid starter for them, because he only played here 6 years, you know, before Indianapolis signed him away in Plan B. Then one thing I forgot was that Wolford played right guard his first year before moving over to left tackle after that. So I had forgotten about that. So it was interesting just to kind of read that again. It's, oh, yeah, he played right guard, but a couple of Pro Bowls and, you know, Harmon was a good player, and I think he was kind of a running back before his time with as much as he caught the ball out of the backfield. If you think about, you know, how that backfield was set up, it was Greg Bell and Rob Riddick that were carrying the mail, and Harmon would come in and catch the ball out of the backfield, right? I mean, for the most part, I mean, I think he had 50-something catches his first or second year with the team. And
teams couldn't cover him.
All right, and that was the irony of it, because all he's remembered for in Buffalo is dropping that pass in the divisional playoff at the end of the game against the Cleveland Browns, which would have won the game. It would have been the game-winning touch. I think it was 6 seconds left because they ran one more play,
Clay Matthews had the pick. Right? The Bills had two picks for in the 2000s, 04, 06, and 09. And things did not work out well in any of the three. You mentioned the 2004 quarterback draft. So in 04, the Bills got Lee Evans with the 13th pick and then really reached to get a quarterback, didn't they?
Right. I think that, you know, Tom Donahoe was looking at the succession plan. If you remember...
Bledsoe here.
2003
right?
was a rough year.
Yeah.
They finished 6-10 and... You know, I think he saw the writing on the wall. You know, he could probably go another year with Bledsoe if it goes well, maybe another year after that. But we really got to get the succession plan in place. And I think he felt prompted to do that because the clock was also ticking on Tom's time here with the Bills as GM, having, you know, not turned it around as quickly as they wanted because they loaded up in free agency, you know, shortly after that. But I sat in the draft room in 04, and Donahoe was working the phones with everybody. He was trying to find a way to get ahead of the Steelers. They were at 13, and they were trying to find a way to get ahead of the Steelers at 11 because they knew the Steelers were going to take a quarterback, whoever was sitting there, and the general consensus was it was going to be Roethlisberger, who was coming from a mid-major, as opposed to Rivers and Eli, who had played major conference football. And that proved to be the case, but they could not get anybody to do a deal with them and slide back to 13, which kind of has the thing rolling in my head now with the 2018 draft. Mm-hmm. The Bills are sitting there at 12, and you want to get up into the top five if you want to get one of those top quarterback prospects, and I don't think there's a team up there that's interested in moving out of the top 10. So you may have to take that rung by rung philosophy and maybe make one trade to get into the top 10 before you start talking turkey with anybody in the top five. But Donahoe could not get anybody to move out. And so he just resigned himself to the fact that I'm going to have to take the best player on the board at 13 and then figure it out after that. And I think by all measures, he certainly reached, you know, for a quarterback who, you know, was an athlete, giant arm, you know, made plays, but played in a lower conference, Conference USA at Tulane, and, you know, they went with Lossman. It was interesting hearing him justify the pick. I still remember him saying that he was impressed by Lossman in that, because his pro day was with Eli Manning. He went to the Ole Miss pro day, you know, being down there at Tulane in Louisiana, he went to the Ole Miss pro day and did his pro day there. And so he was very impressed with the fact that he wasn't shy about going to having a pro day alongside Eli Manning. And he asked to go – he wanted to go first, not second, all that stuff. And
JP wasn't shy, but he wasn't mature. In fact, you were with us when Lossman was on the show, right? Was it last summer? And he was – what college was he working with? Alabama? No, he
– Clemson.
Clemson, Clemson it was. Yeah. He's matured so much, he's such a different guy now. He just wasn't ready back then. Wasn't ready to be drafted, wasn't ready to play when they threw him in the next year.
He was a little punky.
Yeah.
I mean, there was some Jim McMahon to him in a way. I don't think he was as outwardly expressive, but he was kind of like a smart aleck the same way.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that rubbed everybody the right way in the locker room, especially veterans.
06, two first-round picks. Dante Whitner, safety with the 8th pick, and then a disaster, John McCargo at the 26th.
Yeah, and they traded up for John McCargo.
Oh.
They traded up for him, too. And I think, unfortunately, you know, as revered as Marv is as a Hall of Fame coach here in Buffalo, you know, bringing him back as GM, I think, was more a goodwill move by Wister Wilson than anything else. The team had struggled to be competitive, and I think they wanted to save some face with the fans. And I think they just thought, why not Marv? But I don't know if Marv was cut out to be a personnel man to compete with 31 of the other best personnel men on the planet. And I think it was a lot to ask of Marv.
Yeah.
Almost unfairly so.
I'm not even sure Marv wanted that job.
Right. And I think that when he saw the run on defensive tackles, they panicked. They panicked. And McCargo, and it's not all Marv's fault because they had a high grade on McCargo. And I think McCargo was the beneficiary of having Manny Lawson and Mario Williams on either side of him at NC State, which made him look so good. And when they weren't there on either side of him here in Buffalo, he didn't look so good. As bad a miss as Whitner was, McCargo was worse. And these are the kinds of drafts that can set teams back years.
Now, here's one, 09.
Well, let me remind you, everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's the last time they had two first-round picks, 09. They had 11th overall, Aaron Maben. Terrible pick. And then 28th, was it, with Eric Wood at the bottom of the 09 draft.
Yeah, and you know, Wood was a great pick to get down there. I believe that was part of the Jason Peters trade.
Yep.
Because it was clear they weren't going to be able to sign him to a long-term contract extension. They flipped him for a one, and I want to say a four.
Yep.
With Philadelphia, and the one becomes Eric Wood. You say, okay, 10-year player, starter, goes to a Pro Bowl. That's a good return on your value. Of course, Jason Peters was still playing last year
right.
and at a pretty good level. The Maben pick is bad for so many reasons. And I was worried at the combine that year. We're interviewing Dick Geron, and I can't remember if I asked him or one of the other media members asked him, do you need an every-down starter with the 11th pick in the draft? And Dick Geron very quickly said, no, you don't. If you can get a situational player that can help you, you're in good shape. And I said, oh, my gosh, we're taking a situational pass rusher with the 11th pick in the draft. And that's exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst part about it was, and this is where body of work counts for me, because Aaron Maben is the classic one-year wonder player that lights the world on fire for a year. He's playing at a big program in a big-time conference, and people project that out and say, oh, he'll be able to do that. And it just wasn't there. And you want to talk about, you know, playing because it matters to you in here. I think Aaron Maben just had a lot of irons in the fire, and football was just one of those many irons. And I don't think it mattered to him as much as other players. I mean, that rookie minicamp, first training camp for Aaron Maben, his fellow rookie, Eric Wood, is calling him out because he's not laying it on the line in training camp when you're trying to make a good first impression for the first time in pads, and you got your fellow rookie calling you out saying you better play like it matters more. I mean, holy cow.
He was a teammate of yours, Maben.
Yeah, he's a teammate of mine.
Do you remember
anything
about him? Or
he's a friend of mine now. So.
Is he?
Yeah.
Talented artist and a good guy, right?
Yeah, great. He's big-time activist down there in Baltimore.
Activist?
Does a lot for those kids down there. But when he was here, I remember guys saying, like, man, this dude, he was a first-rounder?
question mark, he was a first-rounder?
Question mark, yeah, he's a first-rounder, and it just didn't pan out. And then he left here and went to New York with the Jets.
Okay.
And he was there for, like, 2 years.
Rex
and it was just special
there.
Teams.
Yeah.
You know, I remember that was the biggest thing because, and me even thinking to myself, like, man, I'm playing special teams. This guy was a first rounder, and he's only playing special teams. I mean, what's
did
going
not,
on here?
Did not register a single sack for the Bills.
Really? Wow.
He had six with the Jets in a situational role.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No sacks here.
Hey. See, I think that's why you have so many people, fans now, and you have these as the most recent drafts where you had two picks, and fans are like, oh, you're going to trade away these picks to get a quarterback, and you might miss on that guy.
Yeah.
They'd rather sit and just have as many chances to miss on a guy than to trade him all away and have one chance and you miss on that.
Well, I wonder, Chris, as you put this together, is there any common theme or any lessons to be learned about when you have two picks in the first round? Maybe something to avoid for the Bills this year? I mean, we're talking about a wide range. We're going back to 73. We're talking about a 45-year range of time here with about 45 different personnel guys making selections over that time.
And not only that, I mean, you're talking about different strengths each year and different draft classes. I just think it's way too arbitrary to say lesson learned. I think you take some of those principal things, like maybe don't put all your eggs in the basket on a one-year wonder.
Yeah.
You know, maybe be 100% sure on a guy's personality profile.
Don't reach when it comes to quarterbacks.
Don't
you would take from the Lossman pick.
I think, make sure that football matters to the kid. You got to just go back to the basic principles. I don't think you can lean any one way or another with a position group or say, well, at this point in the first round, you shouldn't even think about, you know, tight end. Or
I believe that.
That just came that to great. Me at I'm the sorry. Same time. Two light bulbs at the same time. Oh, it was man, there, Murphy. It was a fat pitch. Sorry.
I believe it.
Sorry.
Bills with two picks in this year's first round. Chris Brown has written a look back at drafts when the Bills had a pair of ones eight other times. It's up on our website, buffalobills.com. All right, you want? Can you have another 10 minutes? Can you stick around
sure.
and continue
go
your
over
case?
Your stats.
Let's, go over your stats and develop your case for Josh Rosen?
Well, no, I'm not. This is a Josh Allen exercise.
Oh, okay. So along with promoting Josh Rosen, you got to degrade Josh Allen.
No, I'm just it's just something to bring to light here.
Okay, we'll bring.
And it's only one example. There are probably other examples that could very easily go the other way.
But Chris Brown's going to come back with us and do that.
It's an interesting exercise.
We're coming back with more with Chris, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones here until 3. Chris Brown's got a few minutes left here. A tweet from Scott Eddington. Chris Brown, great segment on the John Murphy Show. Obviously, the Josh Allen portion was the highlight, but all around good stuff, guys. People love you bashing Josh Allen. I'm putting the ball on the tee. Go ahead.
Well, all I'm going to say is this. What I did here, this exercise that I'm going to do with you guys,
yes,
was prompted by some Twitter feedback that I got when I said, why was everybody – I think I tweeted something the other day. Why was everybody so – blown away by Josh Allen's pro day, and
that was Friday. People were blown
away. One guy
away.
Is tweeting back at me saying, you can teach footwork, and you can teach this and teach that. You can't teach arm strength. Give me the guy that can throw it 70 yards." And so the first thing I'm thinking is, how often do you have enough time to wait for a 70-yard route to develop to throw it? Right. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two. If your completion percentage is 56% on all passes, mm-hmm. the lowest percentage play is a 70-yard pass play. Yeah. How often's that happening? Mm-hmm. 12%? I mean, so
here's the thing.
So it didn't compute for me. So the guys
it's not the 70-yard passes that get me excited about Josh Allen, and I'm not totally sold on him. I'd take him if I couldn't get to Darnold. It's the 35-yard pass to the sideline in a windstorm that gets me excited about that strong arm.
Right. And okay, fine. But I'm not convinced he's hitting it every time because I watched him throw at the Senior Bowl.
And you were down on him at the Senior Bowl. That's right.
He's throwing on air, and he can't throw a corner out.
Yeah.
To a tight end who's not moving that fast. I mean, the tight ends weren't great there.
I watched him miss the entire quarterback net. Standing
right.
next to Baker Mayfield.
Right.
He missed
right.
the entire net.
You know,
he was like, whoa.
Is he a first-round prospect? I'm sure he is. I just don't prefer him over
right.
some of the other great
so
guys.
So what are these numbers you have?
So here's the thing. So the guy's telling me, you can't teach arm strength. I want that first and foremost. So I said, okay. So I found another strong-armed quarterback who played in the NFL who could throw it a long way. And I said, let me see what his college stats
right.
are.
Okay? Now give us the stats, and we'll try to guess who it is.
Okay, so college stats here for this player. He's got 987 pass attempts, 570 completions. Completion percentage of almost 58%. Threw for over 6,700 yards. Averaged 6.8 per attempt, about a yard less than Allen. He's got a completion percentage about 2 points higher than Allen.
How long ago was
Allen.
This?
Yeah, can you give us a year?
It's since the turn of the century.
Okay.
Okay. So, and he had 60 touchdowns, 27 picks. So about a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio, which mm-hmm. is about the same
as
Josh Allen. More touchdowns, more picks, because Allen had, 40? I think Allen had 44 touchdowns, 21 picks. He only threw for 5,000 yards. Both these players were two-year starters in college. And, you know, this other guy, how long did he play in the NFL? About 8 seasons. Had about the same completion percentage.
Right.
And did not play in a major conference, much like Allen.
He played in a
conference of comparable size. Played in Conference USA.
He was an 8-year starter or just played?
Was not an 8-year starter.
Byron Leftwich.
No.
Well, all right. We need some clues here. You want to give us a college or a
he was a first-round draft choice. Played in Conference USA. If I give you the college, you'll know.
USA. See, these things are realigned so much.
I know. I'm having that trouble myself. Give us another clue, Chris. You know how this works.
California native.
We got a lot of dead air.
Yeah.
You want me to just give it to you?
Yeah.
J.P. Losman.
Oh, we were just talking about him.
J.P. Losman. Threw the ball 70 yards. He had arm strength.
Yeah. Look, I'm not talking about 70-yard passes. Nobody is when they look at his strong arm. Are they?
I think there are people that are enamored with it. I really do.
That's pretty to watch in pro day, and it'll be nice
to
watch.
You think scouts are enamored?
No, I don't think professional scouts care about that.
I hope
they
not.
They care about the outpass. You know, they care about and they care about conditions, playing in conditions, which we seem to have a few of conditions here.
Right. I just worry that even when conditions are pristine, he has trouble getting it there.
I'm going to take one call while you're here, Chris, because this will be a good way to sum up. Dan in Tampa. Go ahead, Dan. I like your question, which is on our screen. What's on your mind, Dan?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
First of all, Chris, fantastic article, man, in terms of the two number ones over the last 45 years.
Yeah, thanks.
I read that intently, and I was like, wow, that was really good.
What did you take from it, Dan? Is there any lesson to be learned, any common theme? I don't know that there is.
Well, yeah, the common theme is that you're just not guaranteed on anything.
It's a crapshoot, yeah.
Right.
It's funny because, like, the top pick was not great, but DeLamalur ended up being Hall of Fame, the second guy, and so on and so forth and so forth and so forth. So,
yeah.
You know, it was a very interesting read in the sense that, you know, just because you have two number ones does not mean you're going to hit on those. Now, I do think that we've had suspect GMs outside of Pauline and Butler until we got Bean. And I really actually believe in Bean. I truly do, until he proves me otherwise. So my point is, all I wanted to do was compliment Chris. That's it.
Oh,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Done.
Thanks, Dan. Dan's line. Go ahead.
Checks in the mail.
Dan's line said, if we don't move up, what's the strategy? That's what it said on my call screen sheet.
Oh.
I think it's a good question.
Yeah.
We have to get to that, right? I'm not there yet. I think still with 4.5 weeks until the draft, plenty of time for the Bills to move up, maybe a two-part move up, as you suggested a moment ago. But at some point, we're going to have to talk about this, Donald, and maybe you, Chris. If they don't, you got to have a plan, right? You got to have a draft strategy. What do you think, Chris?
The thing that is that's curious to me is if you feel you must take, first of all, if you're committed to getting there, and then you determine your best course of action to get there is to take that rung-by-rung approach and get into the top 10 first and then make another deal. How quickly can you execute both of those kinds of transactions? I think if you only had to make one move, you might be inclined to wait until draft day, see how the first two picks unfold, and then make your move. But when you have to make two moves to get to a place where you know the person at your ultimate end point is not going to budge unless you're somewhere here in this range in the draft, now you've got to execute two trades in a really short period of time. And I don't know if that's feasible. So, you know, under that guise, I mean, I really am curious to see if you're committed to getting up there, what's the space of time you need to take step one before you take step two? You can't wait for both on draft day.
You got a lot of time right now.
You have a lot of time now.
You can't do them both on draft night.
Right.
Because you need to get up to whatever it is, if it's number eight, number seven, so that then you can start to talk to those teams that are up there so that they feel comfortable enough. But on draft night, there's no way you can.
And that's the thing, because if you feel like I want to see the first two picks unfold before I determine, yes, I'm making these moves, and I don't want to make move one unless I know I want to make move two, I'm just saying the amount of time you have, knowing you've got to execute two moves instead of just one, might be complicated if you feel you need to see the first couple of picks come off the board before making that determination. I think it's a little bit of a fly in the ointment. It's not impossible to get around, but I think it's a tougher task for sure.
It sets up as one of the more fun drafts we've had around here in decades.
And people, you know, a month ago, we're talking about how the Giants were a true pivot point at two in terms of determining how perhaps the rest of the top 10 was going to fall. Now you got people saying, well, you still don't know what the Browns are doing.
Right.
You know, I mean, you got Jimmy Haslam sitting next to Darnold's parents at his pro day. And then, oh, wow, he's sitting next to, he's talking to Josh Allen's parents at the Wyoming pro day. Who does he like better? You know, whose mom promised to make a better apple pie? I mean, you don't know what's going on.
That's great.
So, you know, I mean, people are now, the whole hot rumor going around now today is, no, it's going to be Allen. It's not going to be Darnold. What are the Giants going to do with two? Are they going to take Darnold? You know, so nobody knows. Until some national reporter has confirmed that the Browns are talking contract with one of these quarterback prospects, I don't think anybody knows anything for certain.
All right. Hey, Chris, thanks. This is great, as the caller said. Great post on BuffaloBills.com, and thanks for brightening our day.
Bringing the energy.
Bringing the energy to push your boy Josh Rosen.
Hey, he could play for my team.
He could play for mine, too. He might not, though.
Yeah, I'm not optimistic.
None of these guys might end up here in Buffalo.
We're back with more in a moment. More of your phone calls when we return to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Buffalo Bills still looking at free agents. Reportedly, the Bills are interested in cornerback Philip Gaines, who is a former Kansas City Chief. Gaines reportedly will be visiting the Bills later this week. Third-round pick of the Chiefs in 2014 has started a total of 16 games, 41 games played for Kansas City in his career so far. And the Bills reportedly have released defensive end Ryan Davis, who played in all 16 games for Buffalo last year. Bills, like the rest of the league, at the NFL meetings in Orlando. GM Brandon Bean will meet with the media down there at 5 p.m. today. Head coach Sean McDermott will talk to the media at the breakfast meeting tomorrow morning. And Bills owner Terry Pegula scheduled to meet with the media sometime tomorrow in Orlando. Giants co-owner John Mara not ruling out the possibility of trading away Odell Beckham Jr. or withholding a contract extension in the wake of a viral social media video posted earlier this month. Mara said there's a possibility the Giants will let Beckham play on his current contract in 2018. For his part, Beckham has said that he will not play without a new long-term deal in 2018. Cleveland Browns have agreed to a contract with quarterback Drew Stanton. Terms not disclosed, but reportedly it's a two-year deal. And the Jets have rescinded their offer to free agent defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh. Jets CEO Christopher Johnson said, just didn't seem in keeping with our long-term plan for the New York Jets. NFL owners meeting in Orlando this week. We'll talk to reporters down there momentarily. Sabres made a move today. They have signed Casey Mittelstadt forward to a three-year entry-level contract. Mittelstadt just finished his freshman season at the University of Minnesota, helped lead the U.S. to a bronze medal at the World Juniors in Buffalo last winter. Casey Mittelstadt, 6'1", 201 pounds, a Big Ten all-freshman team member, Sabres first-round pick in 2017. He's now with the Buffalo Sabres. Sabres play at Toronto tonight. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. Again, our thanks to Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, for joining us to talk about his post. The NFL owners' meeting's going on right now in Orlando, Florida, at the Ritz-Carlton. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, happy to have longtime NFL reporter Don Banks, a contributor at Patriots.com, the Bleacher Report, and The Athletic. Don, I know you're busy down there. Thanks for spending a few minutes with it. We appreciate it.
Good to be back with you, Mark.
Hey, Don, is your room at the Ritz-Carlton as well?
No, we're next door at the JW Marriott. No problem, though. It's a short walk.
That's a good setup. Yeah, I've done that before, owners' meetings, and you stay at a nearby hotel. You don't go where the owners go. Hey, Don, tell us about the catch rule. You have a post in The Athletic. The catch rule gets fixed. What took so long? You think this should have been done sooner, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's really nothing that happened here except for there was finally a tipping point in terms of pressure. And I think the Jesse James call, which effectively decided home field advantage in the AFC playoffs, was that tipping point. I think as soon as I heard, I don't know about you, Murph, but as soon as I heard Roger Goodell, the commissioner, stand up at the Super Bowl State of the League address, clear his throat, and say he wants to see that rule changed, deconstructed, rebuilt from the ground up, and simplified, I knew there was a pretty good chance something was going to finally change. But the reality is, they could have done this as soon as the Calvin Johnson outcry happened, week one of 2010. The only thing that's new is really that the technology has gotten so good that the frame-by-frame review process is now kind of exposing how deep down the rabbit hole the league got in terms of trying to make, you know, the most minutiae decisions and reviews and often reversals based on a very slight ball bobble or the dreaded going to the ground clause that the league has kind of stuck its head in the sand on for a long time and tried to ignore its problem.
You know, Don, I play receiver in this league, and I see why they want to make the changes, and I felt like it were just too many big-time calls and big-time Monday night games, playoff games, whatever the case may be. But playing receiver in this league, I don't think I still have a clear definition of what the, even what they're proposing right now. It still seems like there's some gray area in there.
There is, but I think there's going to be far fewer. And I think the fact that they're saying, okay, they're obviously 2 feet down and possession, everybody can agree on that. What they've added now, or really what they've pared down from the going to the ground part is, you know, you do have to at least tuck the ball away, reach the ball out as if you're trying to either break the plane of the goal or stretch for the first down. You have to do something that shows you got it, you turned back into a football player. I think that's going to happen. First of all, I think they're going to relax the, I guess, the microscope of the replay review, looking for every little flaw. They're going to start from a premise that if it was ruled a catch on the field, it looked like a catch. It is a catch. And I think they're going to – I think this is one thing that once we see it acted out and called in the regular season, we're going to realize it's not as complicated as the rule has been. And the referees have basically been instructed to keep it as simple and streamlined as possible. I understand your confusion because there's still that third element. I just don't think that third element is going to be all that complicated once the game starts happening and catches unfold in replay.
Don, it seems to me the third element includes, as you point out, reaching or extending the ball or tucking the ball in, making a third step, or the ability to perform such an act. That's where the gray area will come in, right?
Well, that I think was added, Murph, because if you catch the ball in the end zone, you don't have any reason to reach it out. You're already in the end zone. You don't have any reason to tuck it in. You basically, they guarded themselves. In other words, if you make a catch in the end zone, in reality, it's just possession and 2 feet down. And they added that the ability to make that move, provided you need to make that move. If you don't in the end zone, it's a touchdown. And where that came in is, let's be honest, Calvin Johnson made that catch. He was going to the ground. He kind of used the ball in one hand to cushion his fall. He was already trying to get up and celebrate with it. And I think they realized that there was a loophole there in the end zone that you don't need that third element.
Part of the problem, it seems to me, Don, too, and I know we don't want to keep it too long, was Riveron and his crew in New York. I mean, we think a lot of, here in Buffalo about the Kelvin Benjamin touchdown catch in New England that was wiped out. Yeah, they you know, they almost went over the top in analyzing the video. Are they pulling that out a little bit, do you think, in the new catch rule?
Didn't you notice that by the calls in the Super Bowl? I mean, in reality, the standard changed roughly at halftime of the Super Bowl because obviously those two touchdowns may have been probably should have been judged entirely different on replay review than they were in the regular. They were judged differently than they were in the regular season. That's why Chris Collinsworth verbally threw up his hands and said, "I don't know anymore. I don't know what you know what the standard is." The reality is someone in the playoffs told Riveron, look, enough. After the Pittsburgh-New England Week 15 Jesse James call, they said we have to stop over-analyzing. We have to stop making this more complicated and turning every call into the Zapruder film. And I think in reality, we saw a preview of what the new standard will be in the second half of the Super Bowl with those two Eagles touchdowns.
I'm going to ask you my favorite question, and Donald's going to shake his head, but why not eliminate use of instant replay and we'll start with catches and let these officials on the field make the call in real time? Wouldn't that solve some of these problems?
Yeah, but you might as well ask for 50 cents a gallon gas, because it's going back in time. You're never going to take that element out of the game now. And that was the opponents of replay said, once you introduce it, it's going to be this creeping giant that takes over more and more of the game. This is the way the fan watches the game, and you're not going to turn back the clock to that point, I don't believe, and turn it back over completely to the officials on the field. That ship has sailed. Things change, and time moves on, Murph.
Well, I'm I hear what you're saying. One more question for you. It deals with your work with thepatriots.com. The Patriots are losing all their tackles in free agency. What are they going to do there, Don?
Well, they got a couple young guys. Obviously, they picked Garcia in the third round. He missed the whole season. I think blood clot issues in his lungs. They've got a couple other young guys. But I think they clearly have to, unless they have a real level of confidence that we're not aware of in those young guys, they're really going to have to focus in the draft. And, you know, they're at number 31. It's not a bad tackle draft, I don't believe. I think I'm correct in that. But it's not particularly rich. It's clearly, the first round's a little light. But I think the mid rounds are better. It's question number one outside of his Gronk coming back in 2018, and I, for the record, I believe he is. But the tackle is you know, glaring need number one in New England. It's interesting; they don't seem panicked. It is only March 26th, but I think it has to be their number one priority in the draft now.
Well, thanks. You know how we are up here; we always look for chinks in the Patriots' armor. We thought that might have been one of them. Hey, Don, thanks for this. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us from the meetings. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you guys.
Don Banks, 28 years, covering the National Football League, writes for Patriots.com, The Athletic, and Bleacher Report. He wrote a post on The Athletic. The catch rule gets fixed. Hooray, what took so long? Yeah, I mean, they're simplifying it. It remains to be seen, Donald, how the simplified catch rule plays out. Even Don admits that. Why does everybody dismiss my replay plan? I'm not saying don't keep replay for fans watching on TV at home. I just don't think it. I don't think it works when you use it as a tool to officiate the game. I think it makes things more difficult. I think that's the reason why we've had so much discussion about what's a catch. I don't know if that's a catch. It's replay. Why does everybody dismiss that like that'll never happen? You're a fool,
I just
Murph.
Think
you have said that. You're foolish.
I mean, sometimes, Murph. I just think, as technology goes, the league will continue to use it. And I can't see them taking the replay away when the fans are still watching replay on TV. Not that, I mean, it matters, because the fans are the ones that are watching, and that's the reason why you get to make money and all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, I just don't think that you can take it away from the refs and still let the fans watch it from 50 different angles, because the fans are still going to complain like crazy. And it's always, the fans are going to complain regardless. So for me, look, I'm not against them taking away. I just don't see it happening.
I still have work to do on my campaign.
On your campaign?
Yes.
I told you just got to get to Roger Goodell.
I'll talk to the commission. Yeah, I'll talk to him. Where are we going to see him? Well, we'll see when the schedule comes out. Maybe he's been to a couple of Bills games lately.
Yeah, you got to get to him. I mean, you find your way downstairs during games anyway. So if you know he's going to be there, make yourself get down on the field so that you can, hey, commission, Raj.
Come here.
I need to talk to you for a second. Hear me out. And then go ahead and campaign for it. It's hard for me to see that going away. But this catch rule thing is interesting to me, because I still feel like there's going to be so much gray area.
I do too.
And
when it comes to, well, he didn't extend the ball, he didn't bring the ball in, he didn't break the plane, he didn't make a football move, but he had the ability to do it.
Right.
That's the gray area right there. What does that mean? Is that time? He had the ball for 2.5 seconds, so he could have done some of those things.
So now it's just totally on the judgment of, you're saying, oh, well, he had 2 seconds. I mean, explain that to us. Is it 2 seconds? Is it 3 seconds? Is it a half a second? Well, you had the ball for a second, so you could have actually reached the ball out. Is that what you're saying?
Is that what they're saying? I don't know. Hopefully we'll hear more about this as the owners' meeting goes along, and they will explain what the new rule is going to be. It's been approved by the competition committee, the new catch rule. We expect that it will be voted on by the owners either probably tomorrow. I think they do that on Tuesdays, but we'll see. And hopefully we'll get a better explanation of exactly what it means, because that's what we're looking for, right?
Yeah, I need to know.
I want to know what a catch is.
I'm a receiver. I don't know what a catch is. I thought I knew. I don't know now.
Hey, what do you know about the Bills draft, and what would it take for you to assign a grade of A to the Buffalo Bills draft this year. That's what we started our conversation about back at 12 noon a couple of hours ago. We will pick that up now. Welcome to join us, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What would it take for you to give the Bills an A grade in the upcoming draft? Give us a call, or you can do it on Twitter at John Murphy Show. John Van Langen tweets, an easy, a top quarterback. That's not going to be so easy.
Wow.
But I agree. If they get one of the top three quarterbacks, yeah, that would probably be an A.
Man, really?
Yeah.
If you just get one of those guys, that's an A. So that means trade everything else away and get that guy.
No, I told you what my criteria was. Well, quarterback. No,
that's what I'm saying.
That's what that guy's saying.
The guy on Twitter, yeah. If you get one of those guys, it's an A. I mean, how? You know, I understand that's what fans here have been wanting for a long time. We just sat here and talked about the last time you had two picks in the first round and time before that and all of these times where it doesn't always work out for you. And right. So that just lets you know that this thing is a crapshoot. You don't know what's going to happen. So if you trade everything away, just get a quarterback, and that quarterback doesn't pan out for you.
You know,
then what are you going
to
see?
I forgot to mention this when Chris was here because we were running out of time, and I asked him what's the takeaway from his post about two draft picks, two first-rounders. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know what it is to me? The draft is imperfect, and it is a crapshoot.
Yeah.
And you can have a year when, oh, my goodness, we got a Hall of Fame guy here in the first round. And you can do that and then have a guy who washes out after a year.
Exactly.
Same draft, same guys making the picks.
You could have a year where you have you trade up to get this quarterback, and then you have a six-round pick that ends up in the Hall of Fame for you. You know, it just – you never know what's going to happen. You never know how a guy – and it's football, so you have health that comes into this. You have off-the-field stuff. You have just a guy's passion for the game, which is what you're hearing about Rosen, his passion for actually playing football. I don't know how true that is. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to speak to the guy. But, I mean, usually you get those later-round picks, they're still trying to play for that contract. And so they're balling for you when you have a guy who goes in the first round that might not pan out. Or things just don't transition. From college, he looks like an all-world player. He gets here, he can't even lace his shoes up right. Doesn't even know how to put his pads on. You know what I mean? That's how the draft is. And that's why you have so many – I think you have so many Bills fans that are like, wait a second, you sure you want to trade things away when you have all of these picks and you can have a lot of different cracks at having good players or having bad players versus trading a bunch of picks away and you have one crack at a quarterback that might not pan out for you.
What do the Bills have to do to get an A in this draft? We were talking about Odell Beckham earlier in the show, too, and Tom in West Seneca is on the line with, I believe, a comment on that. Tom, are you there?
Yeah, John, Dan, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. And I've got to say up front, it still seems like it's football season, and you guys have a great chemistry together. Use debate, but you don't argue. I love that. First of all, quickly about Odell.
We argue about Michigan basketball.
Beckham, sometimes players get to a point where they're such a phenom that they become arrogant, but they become arrogant to the degree where they think they're better than the game, and that's I do not like. And Beckham will be gone from the Giants, I'm sure. And whoever gets him, he's going to be trouble there. And also, I'd like to add to it that I really thought we were going to be in for a deal. I really believe this for a premier quarterback. I still haven't given up on it.
I wouldn't give up on it.
Why? I can't see where they would have signed on McCarron to be the number one starting quarterback. That didn't make sense to me. And let's see. I'll squeeze one more thing in there.
Lots of takes.
About the concussion protocol, I don't think they go far enough. I think that the final say should be by the player's doctor. That would make me feel much better because a guy can retire with $50 million, and if he has a serious case of CTE, what good is it all?
Tom, West Seneca, tons
of takes.
I'm not sure
where that one came from. You know, back to Odell Beckham, and he started to say, you know, his fame and everything. And I truly believe that Odell Beckham is now at the level of superstardom to where, I mean, he's a global iconic player now. He truly is. In the world of social media, there are kids over in China that have the same hairstyle as Odell Beckham. I mean, it's just my son. Daddy, can I have Odell Beckham hair? No.
Your son cannot. Said that?
Yes. I mean, it's crazy.
And you know, there are videos of him out in, like, Germany or something like that, and he's on top of a car, and there are thousands and thousands of people around him just surrounding the car because he's standing on top of this car. And I think being in that city and being the superstar that he is now, that has truly gotten to his head. And I think that I don't know if you're going to be able – he's going to be able to come down off of – where his mind is, like, I'm the best, and you always want to have that confidence, but because he's such a superstar, I don't know if he'll be able to come back down to reality is what I'm saying. And I don't know if, I mean, there are going to be teams that are like, I do not want that guy on my team. I don't care if I'm here in Green Bay, I don't care if I'm in whatever small market here in Buffalo, I can't deal with that guy on my team because he thinks that he is above the entire NFL. And that could be a true thought throughout GMs around the NFL.
There's a tweet to the show from Epic27 as far as the Bills' draft strategy. He says, trade all six top picks to the Giants for the number two pick and Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, you see me retweet that?
No. What'd you put?
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
I don't want Odell Beckham Jr. on my team, Donald. I don't care how big a star he is. I don't want him, his attitude. I don't want the uncertainty that comes with him on my team. Is he talented? He's supremely talented. He's unbelievably talented. I don't want his attitude around my team. It doesn't fit in with anything the Buffalo Bills are about.
Let me tell you something. I mean, you know, Sammy Watkins has some years with injuries and all of that stuff. But we've heard things from Sammy himself about how he was as a person, as a teammate, and all of that stuff when he was here. And I think that part of trading Sammy Watkins away was a character fit in the locker room. So if they were willing to trade Sammy away for that,
yeah.
I mean, Odell Beckham is on another level in terms of, I guess, what he's achieved in this league, and I get that. But at the same time, they're not bringing that guy in. I don't care about the talent, where he is, all of that stuff. I would be shocked. The other day we did, what would shock you if the Bills did something? That right there would shock me. If they brought in Odell Beckham, and I know fans would go crazy, oh, they just brought in Odell Beckham. I just don't see that happening. Not in this locker room, not with this coaching staff.
NFL True or False coming up next. Come on back for that. Plus your phone calls. More of them when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. Donald and I here at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones here in our One Buffalo studio. On tomorrow's show, we will hear from Brandon Bean, Bills general manager, and from Bills coach Sean McDermott down at the NFL owners. Donald's looking on his computer at that picture. It's out there now, available of the all 32 coaches in the NFL. Sean McDermott taking his place there. That's one of the, honestly, that's one of the big things that goes on at the owners' meetings. The picture, yeah.
The picture?
I was at the owners' meeting 4 years ago. Actually, I probably should be there this year just because there's opportunities to talk to the Bills people. But it's an odd atmosphere, Donald, and it's at the Ritz-Carlton there in Orlando. And there's just a lot of fluff. I don't know how to describe it. A lot of stuff going on that you're thinking to yourself, what is this? What kind of company is this? You know what I mean? It's like the 32 top people in like an oil company or a jewelry company all get together or something.
Yeah, it's just a lot of
money. Doesn't feel like a football
It's a
meeting.
Lot of money.
Yeah, a ton of money.
You know, and it's a lot of fluff, as you said.
Doesn't feel like a football thing. And so I have no – if I go next year, I'll go and do a good job. We were there 4 years ago, myself and our producer, Jay Harris, on the day, and it was Monday, I believe, or maybe it was Tuesday, but it was the day that Ralph Wilson passed away, and we were there. Ralph Wilson still owned the team. That was a huge day. We were right in position to talk to several owners about that. Talk to the commissioner about that. Not just interviews, just people coming over and expressing, expressing their regrets and giving us a pat on the back because Bills owner Ralph Wilson. And think about it, you were kind of around. You knew, you played under Ralph Wilson here. That day, the uncertainty began. Like, what's going to happen? Is this the end of the Bills? I remember specifically one show we did. I think we did three or four shows on there that week, talking with Peter King from NBC at the time. Now he's got MMQB. Who really kind of brought home the fact that the Bills' future in Buffalo now with Mr. Wilson gone was in serious jeopardy. Now, I don't think Peter, you know, said it was a death knell, but he said it's going to be tough. It's tough to see the Bills staying in Buffalo with Mr. Wilson gone.
Yeah, I remember when all that stuff started.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, I wasn't paying as close attention.
Sure.
But I remember when the talk started right after that, like, the Bills might not be in Buffalo anymore.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to different players that I had played with that were still on the team at the time. And I'm like, hey, man, because you started to hear about Toronto and L.A. And all of these different cities. And it was like, man, y'all might be going to, like, the West Coast or something like that. And we started to talk about how devastating that would have been to the city of Buffalo, all of that stuff. It
all worked out.
It worked out.
Thanks to the Bagulas in about 6 months. But it was a shocking day. I mean, obviously Mr. Wilson was in poor health and we knew how old he was, but it still kind of shook you to the foundation when you realize he's gone now. Mr. Wilson is gone and there's going to be a new owner and the future of the franchise is basically up for grabs now. It really was for a little while. And that day in particular, it felt it was like the ground had shifted underneath us.
You know, not to get, I mean, that was a crazy day and a crazy time. But to get back to the owner's meetings themselves, and when you go out at the owner's meetings that night, because I know at the Combine, you know, Super Bowl week, all of that stuff, you'll go out and you'll see players and you'll see celebrities and all of that stuff, right? But the owner's meetings, there's a different level of money. And so when you're at the Ritz-Carlton and you're out at night, who's buying drinks?
There's no shortage of people buying drinks. And we didn't, you know, our show was a nighttime show then, I believe. Although we did a daytime show because of Mr. Wilson passing. But, I didn't have any nighttime. Jay Harris and I ate at like a Chili's or something, Applebee's.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were working. We were working, man. But believe me, there's no shortage of people to be able to buy drinks.
do you offer somebody else or they offer you? That's kind of
you weird. Wait for the rich owners to offer you to buy you a drink.
That's how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah, I think that's how it works.
I used to do it when I played here. I used to always go out with people that had the big contracts. So they always offered to buy drinks.
Smart. No, it is. It's really smart. Yeah. Here's a call from Bob on the line with us. Hello, Bob. Welcome. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Just listening through the first part of the show, especially about the A draft grade with the quarterback, wide receiver, and linebacker. I mean, the quarterback, yeah, I totally agree with that. The wide receiver, we definitely have a need. But with those two positions, one position I think we're missing in that first round that these guys are going to desperately need, and that's an offensive line. You lost Eric Wood, leader and a starter. Mills, in my opinion, is a Band-Aid. Incognito's a great player. He's not getting any younger. And you got a rotating door at right guard. You bring in Newhouse. Why did he let go? Why was he let go? Why was he with numerous teams? Is he that good? Bodine, why was he let go?
Money.
I'm concerned about the offensive line, and I think we need to take a look at that in the first round.
First round, huh? I think there are other needs that are ahead of that, but I agree with you. The offensive line is, you know, with five people, it's always a need. And you're right. There are some questions there. I still think quarterback would be number one. Look, they've been a strong rushing team for 2.5-3 years now with that offensive line, which is what I think they're trying to try to do this year. And I think they probably prioritize it differently, that they feel like their needs are greater elsewhere. But
I would say
not in terms of
needs, if there was a pecking order, you would go quarterback, whatever, wide receiver, linebacker right there, 2-3. And then offensive line at, like, number four terms of a need. Because I feel like, you know, they would go into the season saying, look, we can be okay with the line that we had last year.
And they've signed two free agents.
And they've signed two free agents now. So I feel
why are they available? Probably money and performance.
Especially Bodine.
Yeah.
Newhouse, I'm not sure. Maybe it was money and performance not really lining up. But I feel like they would be okay with the guys that they have on the roster right now at the offensive line. I don't see them going – O-line in the first round. You know, it would be linebacker, receiver, quarterback. That's what I see.
Here is Matt in Elma. Go ahead, Matt. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. Love the show.
Thanks, Matt.
A grade for me is Rosen at 2, and then DJ Chark from LSU, wide receiver in the second round, Malik Jefferson, linebacker out of Texas in the third. Part two of what I wanted to say that worries me, Donald, you touched on it a little bit about it about 45 minutes ago. The double trade. So to get to 2, how do you get there? You can't get there from 12 straight up. Definitely not on draft night. What scares me is you get to like 6, and you're kind of at the mercy of everybody in front of you 100%. And if you get to six and you can't move, you got Darnold maybe going. Rosen's probably going to be gone by then. Maybe Mayfield. So you're looking at Allen, and if Allen goes, you get up to six, and you got to take Lamar Jackson at six, I think, or else you end up without a quarterback. And that premise scares me to death. So I'd love to hear what you guys have to say on that.
Yeah, it's a good point. And Matt, thanks for calling. Chris Brown kind of made this point too, as far as from the perspective of Brandon Bean. He's got time to get these two deals done, if it does take two deals. But he's probably really wants to know what happens at the very top, right? Which quarterback would Cleveland get? That would give Brandon Bean, I think, a better picture of how much he needs to move up and how far up he needs to move. What are the Giants' plans? If he can get a sense in that in the next couple of weeks here, Donald, that would kind of, to me, drive his decision on how high to move up and, if he, in fact, needs to move up from 12.
If you're the Giants, you should be trying your hardest to wait this thing all the way to draft.
Yeah.
In business, you want to do what you can do to drive up the price. And the longer we go in time, the closer we get to the draft, the price goes up. I mean, that's just what it is. If you're the Giants and you move back right now, you could be making a mistake. As you know, when you get to draft night, teams are going to be offering you a lot more. And it's the closer we get to draft night, the harder it gets for Brandon Bean, because now he has to make – if he has to make two trades, he has to make them fast. Or he can sit back there and let that thing play out and then see that, they're a run of quarterbacks. Let me just go ahead and stay here because I won't even be able to get the guy that I want.
Right.
So it's a tricky situation for Brandon Bean to be in right now. It really is because, I don't think that they can just go from one move from 12 to number two. I think it's going to take a couple of moves. And so, they might be able to trade and get into like number seven or something like that first. But even then, will the Giants want to move back to seven? You could still run the risk of not getting the guy that you want sitting there at number seven. You could still run the risk of not being able to find a trade partner, and you're sitting there at number seven, and now what? Now Where do you go?
There's a call from Michael in Niagara Falls. Hello, Michael.
Yes, I would just like to comment on the guys' draft this year. This year's draft is, so intriguing with the quarterbacks. I think Buffalo should trade up into the number five pick to get a franchise quarterback. But I think they should stay away from Sam Darnold. I think there's Ryan Leaf written all over him. USC quarterbacks, they don't really pan out. The last one who really had a good career is Carson Palmer. He was drafted early in the 2000s. All the other quarterbacks that have been drafted after him haven't really panned out to have good careers and stuff like that. Yeah, Mark Sanchez may have had 2 years with the Jets in the playoff run, but where is he at, I think they really should take a look at either Josh Rosen or Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield, he's really polarizing. He can move with his feet. He can make throws on the run, and he's also got a decent arm.
Okay, thanks, Michael. I never heard Sam Darnold compared to Ryan Leaf. Have you? I don't even know what the basis of that comparison would be. I don't know. Hey, time now for NFL True or False. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. True, false, the new catch rule, as far as we know about it, will lead to more replays. That's what Dean Blandino, the former head of officiating, says. Blandino says, is it going to be harder for the official in real time to make the call consistently? Are we going to have more plays go to replay? Because it feels like this new rule is geared more towards replay than real-time officiating on the field. That's what Dean Blandino says. The new catch proposal will lead to more replays. I hope he's wrong. True, false, what do you think, Donald? I think true. I think the NFL and the current director of officiating, Riveron, is hooked on replay. Even though they've told him not to, as Don Banks said, going into the Super Bowl last year, when they get to it, and I think it's that third part, control of the football, 2 feet right down. The third part, do you make a football move? Do you take a third step? Reach for a first down? Do you reach for the end zone? Do you pull the ball in? Or do you have the ability? I think that part about the ability to do so is going to force more replays. I think Dean Blandino is right about that. I wish Dean Blandino was still director of officiating, by the way.
Yeah, I'm going to go true on this one, too, for the same reason. That third part right there is the gray area. The ability to. What does that mean?
Yeah, what does it mean? Time?
Right. And how can an official on the field – or even for you guys looking at it in slow motion, say, well, he had the ability to actually reach the ball out, or he had the ability to make another step. What are we talking about here? He didn't do it.
Yeah.
So there's gray area there. And so, yeah, it's going to be more replays and possibly even longer replays.
Good. Look forward to that. NFL True or False Part 2. Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be traded by the Giants. The Giants will trade Odell Beckham. Giants co-owner John Mara didn't rule it out when he talked to the media in Orlando this week. Didn't rule out withholding a contract extension either. Sounds like Mara is mad about the recent, is it video or a photo? I don't even know which it is, of Odell Beckham with a young lady with a pizza and some white lines and some suspect-looking cigarettes. Was that video, Donald? Or was that a pic?
I've never watched it. I'm pretty sure it's a video, though.
I think it's a video, too. In fact, John Mara, the owner, said, I'm tired of answering questions about Odell's behavior and what the latest incident is. I think he knows what we expect of him. Now it's up to him. He would not rule out a possible trade. True or false, the Giants will trade Odell Beckham. I say false.
I say false because I don't know if there's going to be a team to trade for him right now. I mean, all right, look, we're open to trading Odell Beckham, but we want a first-rounder for him.
Yeah.
I mean, what team right now, because you have an Odell Beckham that's saying, or he's done all of this stuff. You had the video come out, what, like last week or something like that, and now he actually has the guts to come out and say, I'm not playing football this year without a contract. And so what team is going to want to deal with that? You don't even know if the league, who's probably investigating this thing, will suspend him. Oh, but we're going to go ahead and give you $20 million a year that you want. I mean, no, I don't think that the Giants will be able to find a trade partner for Odell Beckham Jr., so I'm going to go false.
New Giants coach Pat Shurmur told the New York Daily News that he had a meeting with Beckham last week. His quote, I had an opportunity to visit with Odell. We got a chance to know each other a little bit better. John Mara said, when you're 3-13, as poorly as we played, this is the Giants co-owner, I wouldn't say that anyone is untouchable. Beckham made himself untradeable, though, with his behavior, I think, don't you?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think he really made himself untradeable, and he made it hard for the Giants to actually make that move and get what they would feel comfortable with. I mean, you trade Odell Beckham, you want a first-rounder for him. I mean, he's that type of talent.
Yeah.
But with all of the stuff off the field, what's a team going to give up for Odell Beckham?
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, oh, we're going to give you our third rounder, but we're going to go ahead and pay him $20 million a year. That doesn't make sense for a team that's trying to get him.
We both say false on the Giants will trade Odell Beckham. I think both of us think the right offer would allow the Giants to do it, but I don't think they'll get that offer.
Right. I don't think they're going to find that partner.
That is NFL True or False. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Donald and I back with more in a moment. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider, the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? Chris Brown was in studio with us for an entire hour. Started talking about quarterbacks. Chris Brown talked about the personalities of two of the top available draft picks, Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, and how teams would evaluate their personality. So here's what Chris Brown had to say.
People talk about ceiling all the time. If you want to talk about personality profiles, you better nail the personality profile on somebody that you claim has a high ceiling. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't have the work ethic and the ethos as a football player, they're not going to meet whatever ceiling you think they have. So even more than a guy like Rosen and what he brings to the table now, and knowing about his personality and what he can be, if you have got a 20-year-old quarterback like a Sam Darnold, dollars to donuts, you better know what his personality is to a T, because you're counting on that personality to get him to the ceiling that you're forecasting.
Chris Brown on the personalities of some of the top quarterback prospects. Also on the show earlier this hour, Don Banks, who writes for TheAthletic.com and for Bleacher Report. Don Banks, 28 years as a reporter covering the NFL, talked about the changes to the catch rule that are coming down at the owners' meetings in Orlando, Florida this week. And he said the controversial call, the Steelers' Jesse James play against the Patriots last year. That is really what led the league to change the catch rule. Here's what he said.
In reality, the standard changed roughly at halftime of the Super Bowl, because obviously those two touchdowns may have been, probably should have been, judged entirely different on replay review than they were in the regular. They were judged differently than they were in the regular season. That's why Chris Collinsworth verbally threw up his hands and said, "I don't know anymore. I don't know what, you know, what the standard is." The reality is, someone in the playoffs told Riveron, "Look, enough." After the Pittsburgh, New England Week 15 Jesse James call, they said, "We have to stop over analyzing. We have to stop making this more complicated and turning every call into the Zapruder film."
Actually, they said it after the Kelvin Benjamin touchdown was overturned.
Yeah,
against the Patriots. That was a bad call, Donald. That
was a horrible call.
I mean, and to have it overturned in the replay booth in New York, as opposed to, you know, they got the call on the field. I'll never forget the official. I forget his name now. The official right there pointing to the feet down, checking with his partner, signaling touchdown. He was almost saying, "I dare you to overturn this call," and they did.
It's and for me now, you add more gray area. Yeah, you take the whole the ground can't cause a fumble type of stuff out of it, going to the ground. But now you're talking about with the ability to and to make a football move. I have no clue what that means, with the ability to make a football move.
Let's take a quick call here on the Bills and the draft. Mark and Tonawanda, go ahead, Mark. You got about a minute and a half tops.
Hey, guys, this is the season that we've all been waiting for, right? I said from the beginning that the Bills are going to go up to 4 with Cleveland and take the number 3 quarterback off the list, which would probably be Baker. I don't see them going. I thought that they might go to 6 with Indianapolis, but I think they want to get in front of Denver. You might even see them give back Cleveland's 65th pick along with their 22nd, and then maybe something else, whatever. But I could see that happening so that they can get in front of Denver and then just take that third quarterback.
Okay, and you don't have the Giants. So who takes the other quarterback, Jets or Giants? Cleveland, Jets or Giants?
The Jets.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that could happen. I guess that's a steep price to pay. I think Chris said it. We've talked about it. Might be a two-trade situation to move up into that top 5, Donald, and it seems like that's where they need to be if they're going to get one of those premium quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think the price just drives up on quarterbacks, so you're not going to have a Josh Allen sitting there at number 12 or even a Baker Mayfield. None of these guys will be there at number 12. So you need to get up into the top 5 to get one, and I can't see a team in the top 5 right now going back to 12. That doesn't make sense, because if you're sitting there in the top 5, you have a few players that you feel good with taking, and you know this guy will not be there at number 12. So why would I trade all the way out of that spot? So, yeah, it's going to take a couple of moves to get up there. And I mean, where are those couple of moves coming from? I mean, that's the biggest question, because you're asking any team inside the top 10 to move back outside.
Right. Where are they coming from? I hope that it doesn't involve the 2019 draft, and I hope they don't have to decimate the 2018 draft, but maybe that's what they're looking at, Donald. There's still time to make this happen, and I do believe in Brandon Bean's power of kind of creative functionality, trying to put together a creative proposition to get them up there and get Cleveland or somebody to move down. Probably not out of the top.
Don't be shocked that there are players involved in this trade.
This year's players.
Yeah, players on the roster right now involved in this trade.
They'd have to be good ones.
They have to be really good ones, because it would shock me that they would gave up the entire draft. And I think players would make sense for a team that's like, yeah, well, we needed this position. We've seen this guy play in the draft. I mean, in the NFL anyway. So yeah, we'll go ahead and add that in there instead of giving away the entire draft.
It's gonna be fun the next 4.5 weeks. Are you gonna make? Are you gonna be okay waiting this out? These moves.
I think I'll be okay.
I'm not sure. I think it's
I mean, we got off Monday.
You finally found 2 or 3 hours later, after the uncertainty at the top of the show, Donald has figured out that he's off next Monday. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm off next Monday and Tuesday, but we'll talk a lot more about that in the days ahead. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood. We're back here tomorrow at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.